This is a style steric podfic anthology for Crazy But Sound for the informal Twitter podfic exchange 2014.
Someday he'll come along, the man I love, and he'll be big and strong, the man I love. And when he comes my way, I'll do my best to make him stay.
Five times, Styles and Derek's classmates noticed they were in a committed relationship. And one time, Styles noticed. By Surviva. Read by Cav. Summary, in which Derek and Styles are college roommates, and everyone saw this coming before they did. Scott. How do you even get up there? Scott asks, skeptically. Loft beds are tricky enough on their own. He doesn't know what possessed Derek and Styles to push theirs together. Why would anybody try to create a king-sized loft bed in a teensy tiny dorm room? Unless... Wait, have you guys finally started, you know, doing it? Styles blinks, cocks his head to the side, blinks again. What? First of all, doing it? Are we in middle school? And second, me and Derek? We're friends. Roommates. Friendly roommates who are friends. Styles. Scott gestures meaningfully at the 6-foot-high marital bed taking up the center of the room. What? And Styles calls him oblivious. Why do you need this great big bed if you're not? I fall off my bed. What? I fall off. You know how I move around when I sleep. Now if I stay in the middle of the bed, I've got more buffer space. I don't wake up by hitting the carpet anymore. Scott remembers dozens of disastrous childhood sleepovers when he'd woken by ones of Styles' flailing feet or adventurous elbows. I guess that does make sense. Thank you, Styles replies smugly. See, just because two guys are both bi and roommates, and one of them is really hot, doesn't mean they're having sex. Get your mind out of the gutter, Scott. Styles pets one of the loft's legs approvingly. Megaloft here has saved me some broken bones on more than a few occasions. And on the rare, rare occasion she doesn't, Styles adds, his focus on straightening one of the overlapping comforters. Well, Derek usually sleeps on top of me, so he stops me from falling off the edge. Isaac. Isaac's almost done with a particularly tricky problem set when he hears a rhythmic dinging from the computer on Derek's desk. Up on Derek and Styles' weird combined bed, Styles starts disentangling himself from the blankets. Are you parent calling, Derek? Yeah. Derek presses a button on the laptop. Hi, Mom. Isaac starts gathering up his notes. I'll give you some privacy. I can do my homework somewhere else. Don't worry about it, Derek and Styles say in unison. These calls are usually short, Styles assures Isaac as he climbs out of the bed and starts rooting around in the pile of clothes on the ground for a pair of pants. Can you hear me all right? Is the video working? Asks the laptop. You're coming in fine, Mom, Derek assures her. How are you? Great. How is second semester going? Good. Just aced my psych midterm. Derek scratches his head and looks down at the floor in embarrassment. Good for you, sweetie, Derek's mom coos. And how is Styles? Where is he anyway? Styles finishing buttoning up his pants and clatters over to the laptop. Here I am. Here you are, exclaims Derek's mom, her glee apparent even through the cheap laptop speakers. Did the essay work out? Styles nods, bending double so the camera can see his face. Thanks for the advice about the conclusion. Any time, dear. Now, Styles texted me and said you guys went across the bay to San Francisco for a day. So how was that? Foggy. Derek's eyebrows waggle empathetically. We saw a lot of cool... Styles wiggles around behind Derek's desk chair to find a comfortable spot in front of the camera. I'm gonna kill my back this way. Sighing, Derek spins around in the chair to face Styles, scoops him onto his lap with one perfunctory arm, then wheels back around to his mother, one arm firmly around Styles' waist. That's better, Styles sighs, melting back against Derek's chest. Styles and Derek spent the next 7.5 minutes recounting their adventurous gallivanting around Girardelli Square, Pier 39, and, of course, the Castro, all to Derek's mother's delight, until Styles yelps, "Wait! Class started 2 minutes ago!" Derek swears, sets Styles on the ground, then leaps for his backpack. They disappear in a whirlwind of flying coats and books, and not 30 seconds later, the only sign that they were in the room at all is the faint voice emanating from the laptop, saying, "Wait, how do I hang up the call? Hello, is this the... No, now I'm in full screen." Isaac approaches the laptop with the caution of a gazelle approaching a wounded lion. He is not good with strangers. "Hello?" "Oh," the dark-haired woman on the screen looks up. "Where did you come from?" "I was..." Isaac waves a hand at the beanbag he was sitting on, out of frame. "Doing homework." "You pressed the little red phone icon." "You were here the whole time?" Derek's mom asks in concern. "Oh, dear. I hope you didn't feel left out." "No, no," Isaac assures her quickly. "Styles and Derek are, good hosts?" The woman smiles broadly. Isaac can see where Derek gets his looks from. "That's my Derek. And Styles is such a dear. I'm so glad they found each other." "Oh, yeah." Isaac glances at the door. "He's so bad with parents. I mean, it was kind of a random matchup from the housing department, but I guess you could say..." Derek's mom chuckles. "Oh, don't worry. I'm hip. We both know what I'm talking about." Isaac's face must look confused because she goes on to clarify. "You know... how Styles is Derek's little boyfriend, or partner, or whatever they're calling it these days. Derek hasn't said anything, but I can tell. They aren't very subtle, and I video talk with them every week." Her face grows more serious. "Could you maybe hint to Derek that I'd still love him if he came out? He and Styles are so in love, I don't want them to feel like they can't talk about it with me." Isaac fumbles with the graph paper in his hands. "I don't think they're actually dating." Derek's mom squints at him in confusion. I mean, we all kind of think they should," Isaac offers encouragingly. "There's been a pool kind of in the dorm since like they met, but nothing yet. Sorry." Derek's mom inhales heavily as she takes in this information, nodding to herself. "I see." She taps a finger against her chin, takes a thoughtful sip of her tea, then says, "Can I get in on this pool?" Ellison. The dining hall is always so noisy and crowded that sometimes Ellison can't stand it. But hey, their whole gang gets together there every night to eat dinner together like a family, so she has a bit of a soft spot for the place. There's a rhythm to it. Somebody sends out a text to the group thread, "Anybody up for dinner?" They all are. And they march out to the dining hall at 6:30. Ellison eats big at lunch, so she has a salad for dinner, skipping all of the lines and saving them a table. Then she sits, fork in hand, and watches first Erica sit down with her pizza and fruit salad, then Isaac with his meat of the day and chocolate milk, Scott and his burger, Lydia and her brown rice with veggies, and then... Styles and Derek always show up at the same time, two trays in tow, one piled with meat, one with green stuff, and then they sit next to each other and exchange food. "I grabbed you some chicken."
"Chicken?"
"You said you were craving some earlier today, so I thought..."
"No, just surprised you remembered."
"Surprised I remembered? Ha!
Can I steal your..."
"Why do you think I got them?"
"Take some asparagus. You could use the iron. And I stocked up on those red peppers."
"My favorite. And I braved the dessert line for you, I'll have you know. So here's your mooncake."
"I forgot it was Mooncake Monday."
"That's what you have me for.
Orange juice? Orange juice. Satisfied with their meals, Derek and Stiles grab their utensils in unison and tug in, their elbows brushing occasionally. Lydia turns to Jackson accusingly. You never bring me orange juice. Boyd. Boyd's showers are his quiet time. Dorm life can be loud and distracting, and Boyd was not designed to deal with college freshmen all day long, so he has long showers at odd hours. Nobody else showers at 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Except for today, apparently. Those two idiots from room 467 will not stop talking. Hang on, did I forget shampoo again? God, I'm a dumbass. Here. Out of the corner of his eye, Boyd sees a hairy arm rise out of one of the shower stalls, offering a bottle of shampoo. Thanks, Dare Bear. Don't call me that. You love it. There's no reply from Dare Bear's stall, but there's no denial either. Oh, Boyd thinks. These are the jokers who have people betting good money on them getting together. Hey, Dare Bear. The arm rises out of the stall again, holding a bottle of what Boyd assumes is conditioner. Thanks. I'm going to remember to buy more hair stuff eventually, I swear it. Don't worry about it. You're a hairy dude. You need that shampoo to deal with your own fur. Not that much. Besides, we... What was that? The other voice asks in confusion. I couldn't hear you. We, I like it when we smell the same, mutters Dare Bear. Boyd rolls his eyes. The other voice coos. Aw, you big softy. Now wash my back. Boyd hears one of the showers shut off, a curtain open, the slap of wet shower sandals against the floor, another curtain open, close, and then, ah, yes, now there's the spot I can never reach. You're hopeless, Dare Bear says fondly. Bend over a bit so I can get your lower back. Boyd hastily shuts off his water and reaches for his threadbare towel. He needs to get out of here before that loafer gets any lower. Lydia. Lydia prides herself on being able to hold her liquor. She figured out a formula long ago that told her how many ounces of whatever proof alcohol she should drink in a night, based on what she'd eaten that day, her current weight down to the half pound, and desired level of drunkenness. As such, she's happily warm and tipsy as their wolf pack, as Scott's taken to calling their group of friends, wanders back to their dorm from the frat party. Stiles, on the other hand, is smashed. He's clumsy enough sober that he's a disaster when drunk, staggering around, accidentally smacking strangers they pass on the street, and giggling all the while. Luckily, Lydia notes with amusement, Derek's taken it upon himself to keep Stiles in check. Whoa! Stiles slurs, stumbling over a crack in the pavement before Derek's arms catch him around the middle and pull him into his side. Wow, okay, lots of, cracks. On the ground. You've got me, though. Derek's cheeks are rosy with alcohol and the 2 a.m. cold, but he sounds otherwise sober when he replies. I've got you. And you're so... Stiles makes a bodybuilder pose. You could just pick me up and carry me home. Grrr, Derek growls, and swoops down to catch Stiles' knees and hoists him up into a sudden, stumbling bridal carry. Stiles screeches with laughter and throws his arms around Derek's neck. The whole group has stopped walking now, too distracted by Derek and Stiles' shenanigans to be concerned with getting back to the dorm. One of Stiles' hands reaches out and caresses Derek's cheek, running exploratory fingers over his cheekbones and stubble. He leans in, and the whole group collectively catches their breath. Lydia, with the precision of a girl who was very popular in high school, can hear their thoughts. Is this it? Are we about to witness the moment these two have been building up towards for months? Will relationship history be made tonight, and at Derek and Stiles' wedding, will we be able to say that we were there? In that hushed moment of apprehension, Stiles' face drifts closer to Derek's, a hand still resting on his cheek, electricity in the air, and finally, when there's barely a millimeter of space between them, Stiles twists his head to the side and scrapes his cheek along Derek's in one sudden swipe.
"You're scratchy," he giggles, rubbing his face against Derek's stubble a few times more before flopping his head onto Derek's shoulder. "Now come on, take me home, Valiant Knight."
Lydia and Erica groan in unison, while the guys all roll their eyes. By the time they're around the corner from the dorm, it's late and cold, and they're tired. Nobody talks. They just trudge across the dew-damp grass of the quad towards their building. Lydia is near the back of the procession. Her heels are proving to be a detriment. And Derek, still carrying Styles, makes up the caboose. The bell starts ringing 3 a.m, and Lydia hears, just barely, Styles' whisper of, "You know I, like, love you, man, right?" There's a pause, so long that Lydia wonders if Derek hurt Styles at all. But then, even quieter than Styles, she hears, "I love you too." It's silent after that, just quiet steps plodding in the darkness. Derek carries Styles up all 4 flights of stairs to their room. Styles. They should really be sleeping. It's a school night. They both have 8 a.m. lectures tomorrow. And if they keep talking, they'll wake up so late tomorrow morning, they won't have time to get coffee together. But damn it, Styles wants to hear the rest of Derek's story.
"Professor Keaton didn't know what to say to that," Derek finishes, half speaking to Styles, half to the pillow. "He just stood up at the front with his toupee on sideways and ended up dismissing us 10 minutes early."
"No."
"Yes."
"That's hilarious."
"Most of the class was laughing," Derek allows. Styles scoffs.
"You don't give yourself enough credit, dude. You're hilarious."
"It was a hilarious set of circumstances," Derek amends, pulling the comforter further over his shoulders. Sighing dramatically, Styles reaches over to ruffle Derek's hair.
"All right, you humble Hubert."
Chuckling, Derek raises an eyebrow.
"Humble Hubert?
I'm improvising." Styles tucks himself further under Derek's arm.
"Shit, now the blanket's off my feet. Yuck."
Derek does a swift sit-up that sets the loft shaking and flips the bright green blanket back over Styles' feet, warm hands tucking the fabric around his toes.
"My hero,"
Styles swoons when Derek lays back down next to him. Derek makes a face, but he lets Styles burrow into his chest in gratitude. Derek is so warm. Styles is glad he has a friend like Derek who likes to cuddle and gets his humor and cares when he's upset and is secretly hilarious and smart and handsome. Derek's fingers brush lightly over the back of Styles' neck. It's so soothing, sending melty little shivers all down his back.
"We should probably go to sleep," he rumbles.
Styles murmurs, "Yeah," and climbs off of Derek's chest, turning on his side.
"You be the big spoon.
You're ahead of me," he finishes as one of Derek's big, muscly Neanderthal arms loops around his waist and his breath puffs into Styles' hair.
"Hmm,"
Derek agrees. He gets nonverbal when he's sleepy. It's adorable. God, Styles just wants this forever. "Hey, Derek."
"Hmm?"
"We're gonna live together next year, right?" He feels Derek's ribs expand, then contract behind him.
"Of course."
His voice is warm. Styles smiles into the dark of their room, squeezes Derek's hand.
"Good. I really like this. You know, us too."
Derek doesn't say anything, and for a terrifying second, Styles thinks he's weirded him out, gone too far, said too much. Then he feels a touch, ever so soft, of lips on the back of his neck. Something in Styles' chest slides into place. It's a deal, then. The next morning, Derek climbs out of bed first, like he always does. He tucks on Styles' ankle until Styles wakes up too, like he always does. They get dressed in a fumbling rush, like they always do. Styles steals Derek's jacket, like he always does. Then they get the same drinks, as always, at the campus Starbucks. They reach Derek's lecture hall first, as always. And then Styles pecks Derek's on the lips and says, "See you after class." Styles smiles to himself as he turns on his heel and walks towards his own classroom.
It's about time they shook up the routine. The smile grows broader as he hears rapid footsteps echo down the empty hallway, catching up to him. As he's being tackled to the ground in a warm, muscled embrace, Styles wonders if they'll be able to get any sort of profit out of the pool. The end. Gave Your Smile to Me by SarahGeek16, read by Kath. Summary, in which Styles is a hooker, but not really. Derek wants to feed his skinny little body, and there is soup, not necessarily in that order.
Someday he'll come along, the man I love, and he'll be big and strong, the man I love. And when he comes my way, I'll do my best to make him stay.
Styles still wasn't sure how he'd gotten here. And by here he meant on a street corner in the dark, wearing nothing but a tight mesh shirt, metal-colored leather shorts that were, of course, barely covering his ass, and cowboy boots. Okay, so he knew how he'd gotten here, but what he really wasn't certain of was the why. Why did the universe use him as its whipping boy? He was a good person. He paid his taxes. He didn't pick on that one guy at the department with a serious unibrow going on. And contrary to popular belief, thank you very much, Scott, seriously, you're going to get the Best Friend of the Year award. This was not funny. This was not awesome. And his ass cheeks were going to turn blue and fall off at any moment. And fall off at any moment. Of course he knew that he'd sort of brought this on himself. His mouth, as his kindergarten teacher, Mrs. McGimley, God rest her grouchy, shrewish old soul, told him, would constantly get him into trouble. The police department that he worked for was trying to get solicitors and possible pedophiles. Young, teenage-looking men and women whom Lydia had it out for were being assigned to hit the streets in a temporary operation. They had originally been 5 male candidates to go undercover in the sting operation, and they only needed 3. Williams nearly didn't make the cut. He was sort of built. But he still had the best puppy dog eyes. Not that anyone ever said this to his face, of course. The other guy was Samuel, who was just angelic. He had blonde hair that looked like it had been spun from holy gold. Suspects had surrendered to his very disappointed face. He was usually called in for suicides because his big blue eyes reminded people of all that was bright and sunny in the world. People around the department called him Captain America. The third guy was going to be some newbie whose name Styles was constantly forgetting. Styles had been considered because, as Erica said, "You're built like a teenager and you have Bambi eyes. Don't tell me that you don't fit the profile." However, Lydia kept him in the office and investigating. "You're totally awesome for not assigning me to this gig, dude," Styles had said. "I like being a cop and everything, but did you see the leather shorts that Erica was carrying around?" He'd broken out in nervous shivers at the sight. "I decided to be merciful for once," Lydia had said, taking a sip of her non-fat white chocolate latte, looking gorgeous and unruffled as always. Her engagement ring had gleamed proudly on her finger. Personally, Styles thought that she was still too exuberant from the proposal to torment him. For a few days, anyway. "Well, it's a good thing," he'd grinned conspiratorially. "Otherwise, I'd have to tell Jackson about that time when we made out while you guys were still on." "What?" said Jackson from where he'd just come in. He replaced the rookie. He also got the honor of wearing the leather shorts. They were snug and itchy, and he was pretty sure that he would be as red as a traffic light if he weren't so cold. It was only about 55 degrees out, but the wind chill factor had gone up. Styles resentfully thought of Samuel and his painted-on skinny jeans. Lucky bastard. He surveyed the surroundings, looking at the tall, graffiti-covered buildings and cracked sidewalls. He wasn't in a particularly bad part of town, just a little spot where people were rougher. Across the street, a bar called The Den apparently was getting good business. Girls in too-high boots, with guys hanging off their arms, walked in and out, laughing loudly. There was even a bouncer, a tall black guy who had an unreadable expression. Stiles looked at them wistfully. That could have totally been him if he hadn't suddenly grown a hero complex in freshman year of college and caught a killer, Nancy Drew style. It had felt good. Sure, he'd vomited and maybe even had a small panic attack in the process, but it had still been something he'd wanted to do. So he'd switched his major from history to criminal justice, finished college, and became a cop. His father had been half proud, half furious. It was a rather comic expression. Stiles had snapped a picture and was currently using it as the photo ID on his phone for the man. "How are you looking out there, Stilinski?" Greenberg, another officer, was his watcher. They were in an abandoned building a few doors over. Stiles had a small, skin-colored earpiece in his ear. Stiles was supposed to take his customers into a side alley where another officer in civilian clothing was waiting to question and or arrest them. "I can't feel my balls," Stiles said cheerfully, barely moving his lips. "Also, I think I've blinked eyeliner into my eye. So, if you see tears, I'm not crying. My name is Red Fox, by the way, Greenberg. Red Fox." "That's the spirit," Greenberg said, a grin in his voice. "Try to look a bit more hot and willing rather than cold and miserable, and we might make a hooker out of you yet." "Hooray!" Stiles shut up to make eyes at a passing man. He looked to be in his mid-twenties, wearing a suit and holding a briefcase. His curly brown hair stood out under the streetlight. Stiles tried to look hooker, but his brief lessons with Erica Beck at the PD evaporated from his mind. Ignoring the churning in his stomach, he tried to look seductive. "Hey, baby, want a good time?" The guy looked unsure for a minute, before he looked around, his gaze darting to the bar across the street. And then he leaned forward. "What do you do?" Oh, God. He was actually doing this. This was actually happening. He didn't know whether to fist pump or upchuck. "Anything you want," his mouth took over for him. And to his horror, he kept going. "I mean, as long as you've got the dough, I can fulfill your every fantasy right over there. Call me your personal Jesus. If you want me to be the Catwoman to your Batman, I will indeed be the Catwoman to your Batman. And hell, who's to say you wouldn't want to be Catwoman? There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, sometimes I fantasize about being Batgirl to someone's Joker, and if that's not kinky..." "Hey, you." The voice contained a growl and just a hint of a curl of a lip. Stiles jumped and turned away from his customer, who looked kind of shell-shocked, and looked at the newcomer. The sheer attractiveness of this guy was like a sledgehammer to the stomach. He was tall and dark-haired, wearing a tight black t-shirt with black jeans under a leather jacket. Stubble brushed over a jaw that was shaped enough to be the inspiration for a sculpture. Short, messy black hair barely covered luminous eyes that stared at them in the dark. "Beat it," the demigod told Stiles as John. The man nodded and practically ran down the street, his footsteps disappearing. The man folded his arms, his pectorals bulging like softballs. It was a wonder that the seams in his shirt were still together. "What," the man growled, "are you doing out here?" Stiles wiped at his mouth absently, doing a drool check. Hooking?" "Not anymore, you're not." The man glowered spectacularly. "How old are you?" 17, Stiles improvised, glowering at the jerk. "Not that it's any of your business." "That," the GQ model pointed to the bar across the street, "is my building. Your pale, skinny ass is going to upset it. God, when was the last time that you even ate? Last week?" There was a snicker over the earpiece. And then Greenberg lost it, unprofessionally, cackling and hooting. Stiles ignored him, his face burning. He knew he was rather skinny, but that was muscle, damn it. Lean, Stilinski, muscle. "For your information," he replied rather testily, "I ate this morning. I had a bagel and a coffee." The man snorted, unconvinced. "Yeah, right." Stiles was so insulted that he couldn't speak, which was not a regular thing. His lips flapped uselessly in shock, while the man shook his head, his eyes softening.
"Look," he said, "my name's Derek, Derek Hale. My sister Laura runs a shelter. There's food and a warm bed for free. She'll even try to help you find relatives that you can stay with. Are you living on the streets?"
"No."
"It's okay if you are," Derek said, all concerned and hostile and absolutely gorgeous. "Nothing to be ashamed of, but you shouldn't have to do this."
"I'm fine." Stiles' voice got even higher to his shame.
This really hadn't been in the "So You Want to Be an Undercover Prostitute" handbooks.
"Really?"
Derek furrowed his impressive brow, looking all tragic and crumpy. He grunted, and then turned away to go back across the street. Stiles watched the straight, muscular line of his shoulders as they disappeared across the street.
"Shut up,"
Stiles said through his teeth.
"Are you getting lippy with your superior, Red Fox?" Greenberg asked, sounding gleeful.
"Superior's my ass," Stiles grumbled under his breath. "You're barely a year older than me."
"And yet," Greenberg replied, "and yet."
"Oh, look, he's coming back, and is that a jacket?" It was indeed a jacket. It was bright red and thick and tucked under Derek's huge arm like a prize. He looked both ways before crossing the street, gravel crunching under his boots.
"Here," Derek said, shoving the jacket at him.
Stiles eyed it, seriously considered putting up a fight. And then, with a put-upon sigh, he slid it on. It was warm and smelled slightly of cigarettes and beer. Stiles loved it.
"Thank you," he said, putting it on. "Operation be damned."
He was rewarded with the glower fading from Derek's eyebrows a bit. There was an odd moment when they stared at each other. Stiles felt his face flushing again. He fiddled with a zipper on the jacket. It actually felt fairly new.
"So," he said slowly, half hoping that Derek wouldn't accept, because he would have to get him arrested, and half hoping he would, because dude was lickable. "Did you want to step into my..."
"No," Derek said so forcefully that it was like it was punched out of him. "Absolutely not." Stiles was a little hurt.
"You don't want none of the Red Fox?"
Derek's glare could have made the Hulk pee his elasticy pants a little.
"The Red Fox," he said, the name coming out with an astonishing amount of sarcasm, "is underage. Which is why Boyd over here..."
He pointed to the huge black bouncer outside the bar, who waved a little. "Is going to make sure that the Red Fox doesn't get any customers. Once you're done being an idiot, come inside the bar and eat."
"That's unfair."
"It's what's right."
Derek looked at him, frowning again, before he turned and walked away.
"You're a huge jerk,"
Stiles shouted at his back, waving a fist for good measure.
"Happy to help," Derek called back.
"I hear you've got a concerned citizen," Lydia said a few days later.
Derek hadn't let up with the meddling. Bowls of warm, hearty soup delivered by Boyd, who was a man of few words but actually very nice, with crackers on the side, hot chocolate, that same red jacket, and occasionally talk, which mostly consisted of,
"Come inside and get something to eat."
"No."
"Growl. Stiles."
"Yes, our bartender."
Stiles had gotten no customers. Derek had looked immensely, attractively, infuriatingly smug about it. He just didn't know that he was cocking up an entire police operation.
"Derek Hale," Stiles said with less rancor than he liked.
Came out more breathless and dreamy. He only kept himself from resting his chin on his hand, Ariel pining after Eric style, through sheer force of will. Derek was... how could he even start? It had taken a few days of poking and prodding and not so slyly questioning Boyd, but Stiles had managed to piece together information about Derek. He was 27 years old, 4 years older than Stiles, lived alone. No pets, no girlfriend, or boyfriend, he'd confessed, and Stiles had used a Herculean amount of self-control to not fist-pump the air. His parents were wealthy. He'd said this vaguely, almost with a hint of guilt. Stiles had Googled him later. Wealthy didn't even cover it. Derek used the money to help better the community. He donated to Laura's shelter, volunteered around the area, and helped people who looked a bit lost. This information was dragged out of Boyd. He loved his parents and wanted them happy, but he'd hated law. He'd switched his major to culinary arts. "But you own a bar," Stiles had said blankly. "A bar that I cook in, idiot." "Wait, wait, so that soup? That was you?" Something like a blush had risen in Derek's cheeks as he'd nodded. "It's nothing." "Nothing? Derek, Gordon Ramsay would have a seizure at how good that was." "So I gathered, you know, from all the shameless moaning," Derek said dryly, trying to recover some of his badassery. It was too late. Stiles knew that he was nothing but a huge teddy bear. "Laura makes a mean steak, too, for all of her residents." "Really? That sounds Oh, nice try, dude." He'd waggled a finger at Derek, who'd looked unrepentant. "Stiles," he said, long-suffering. "Derek." They'd stared at each other, joking at first, but slowly getting more intense. Stiles had felt his face heating up. His eyes had darted down to Derek's mouth, which looked so... "Man," Greenberg sighed over the earpiece, "if I wrote this down and turned it into a romantic comedy, I'd be rolling in it." And the moment was over. "Right," Lydia said now, eyeing him. She dropped a folder in front of him. "String of corner store robberies. It's yours and Jameson's. You're off the solicitation case." "What?" Stiles' spine snapped straight as he lurched up from his desk. "But I..." "Have a big man crush on Derek Hale. Yes, I know." Lydia rolled her eyes, her red mouth in an odd half-smirk, half-frown. "But you're a detective, Stiles. That was just a temporary punishment." "But..." "I need you on this case," she said, her tone leaving no room for argument. Stiles was pretty sure that he looked as miserable as he felt, because Lydia softened slightly. "Sorry. The chief is clamoring for this to be solved, though." "Fine," Stiles sighed and picked up the case folder, starting half-heartedly to flip through it. "I have a problem," Stiles announced, bursting in. Scott looked up, his eyes wide and a stethoscope hanging from his ears. His hand was on the other end of a thermometer that was stuck up a poodle's butt. "Stiles," he asked slowly, "what are you doing?" Stiles was aware that he looked a little like hell. The robbery case had turned into a nasty murder, and he'd been up for 3 days, running on coffee and depression. After a week of chasing, he'd cornered his bad guy. That's when he'd thought he'd seen a leather jacket out of the corner of his eye. "Derek," his mind had screamed. "Ow, hell, ballsack, ow," went his eye. He now had a very impressive shiner, and not one, not two, but 3 smacks on the back of the head for getting distracted. Courtesy of Lydia, Greenberg, and his father, of course. Leather jacket had not been Derek, obviously. "Hi, Scotty," Stiles dropped into the chair next to the poodle's owner. The old woman pressed a hand to her chest. "Good gracious," she said, all old womanly outrage and purple silk. "Don't mind me, Barbara," Stiles told her. "I'm an officer of the law." "Young man, my name is not..." "I have developed," Stiles spoke over her, turning to Scott, "an Allison and Scott crush on Derek Hale." Scott had gotten the lowdown on the bartender on the very first night of Stiles' undercover work. "Stiles, are you serious right now?" Scott looked at him, blinking. "Do I look serious? 'Cause if I don't, that's just a side effect of this. Yesterday we were reading a report about a serial killer, and I could not stop smiling. Someone asked me if something was wrong with me. I have fallen. He has me tripping. He has me stumbling over random things. And I did, in fact, fumble with my keys for a good 20 minutes last night."
Both occupants of the room stared at him, wordless. Stiles groaned.
Stop looking at me like that. I can't help it.
Okay, buddy, Scott said soothingly. Tell me, have you called him?
And tell him what, Scott? Oh, hi, Derek, this is Stiles. That hooker that you acted completely and utterly adorable over? Except, you know, I'm not actually a hooker, I'm a detective. Who happens to want to have your fuzzy-eyebrowed monosyllabic babies?
Well, I have never, Barbara said, outrage in every line of her body.
Martha is totally healthy, Mrs. Crawford, Scott said hurriedly. Excellent job, as always. Have a very nice day.
Hmm, she stood, scooped her dog up off the table, and bustled out the door.
You can get free doggy treat coupons at the front desk, Stiles called after her.
The door slammed.
Scott winced and looked momentarily put out before he turned to Stiles.
She was a regular, he scolded.
Yeah, yeah, Stiles waved a hand. Now, Scott, tell me what I need to do. Tell me!
I can't just tell you what to do. Scott wrinkled his nose at the thought.
He began going around the room, pulling out the spray and wipes to clean the table.
On the contrary, I think you can. That way, when it inevitably fails, I can blame you.
Ha ha, Scott smirked. Have you ever thought of,
he bit his lips.
Have you tried Allison?
Good idea, dude, Stiles brightened. Allison would know what to do. She always had a clear, logical mind. Allison had lost her mind.
Tell him the truth as gently as possible, Stiles, he mocked as he walked into the police department later on that day. He immediately felt bad about it. Mocking Allison was like mocking Glinda the Good Witch from The Wizard of Oz. It just wasn't done. At any moment, a bunch of munchkins were going to come out of the bushes and start biting at Stiles' ankles. Shaking the image away, Stiles walked into the air-conditioned department. He waved absently at some people he knew, heading for his office. He had 3 days off after that hellish case, but there was honestly nothing to do at home but play video games and fantasize about Derek Hale. And while he was super happy about doing the latter, he figured it would only be masochistic of him. It was obvious that that little fantasy was going to go absolutely nowhere. Which was why, when Stiles heard Derek's voice, he thought that it was hallucinating. It wasn't that far off. Once during his brief, horribly embarrassing infatuation with Lydia, he imagined her in his favorite coffee shop, and actually started talking to her. Embarrassing? Yeah, that didn't even cover it. But now he was absolutely sure that he wasn't imagining it. There was no way that he'd be able to visualize Derek's perfectly growly, I am about to rip out your throat tone. He walked slowly, stopping to tip his head just around the corner. Derek was standing at the front desk, dressed in all of his black glory. Stiles hadn't realized that he'd been going through withdrawals until he spotted that ass in those jeans. He sucked up the sight like it was the nectar of the gods. There was a woman standing with him, and from the same dark coloring and leather jacket, Stiles deduced that it was Laura. Derek had always talked about her with a half-fond, half-irritated smile. She looked severe right now, like a predator.
So, you're telling me, Derek was saying with barely their patience, that you're completely unwilling to even do a little search?
Mrs. Grace looked unruffled by his tone. The little woman had balls of steel.
I'm saying that you don't have to worry about him anymore, she offered a kind smile.
It seemed to have the opposite effect that it was supposed to on Derek, though. All of the blood drained from the man's face. He looked haunted.
You mean he's dead? He asked, hoarse.
And Stiles could have actually died right then. He was an awful person. An awful, awful person. Really, he deserved whatever the universe threw at him right now. Which was, apparently, Pry McClaggart, who had been walking down the hallway with his head in the clouds. He collided with Stiles. Easily as clumsy as him, the man was a tangle of limbs and papers flying everywhere.
Oh, Christ. Sorry, God, and you're Stalinsky and injured, and of course you are. God, I'm sorry.
Here, let me help you, a voice came from behind them. Every single nerve in Stalz's body snapped to attention, nearly making his hair stand on end. It was almost in slow motion that a hand gripped his and helped pull him up. And then he was face to face with Laura Hale. Her eyes went wide, the exact painful shade as Derek's. And then she was gripping his chin, turning his face this way and that.
Derek,
she barked, and like an apparition, he was there. He looked like someone had shot him with an anesthetic. His spine loosened, and for a moment his head almost hung in relief.
Stiles, he said,
and then he spotted the black eye. His posture went from weak with relief to homicidal in about 0.03 seconds.
Who the hell did this to you?
Don't worry, McLaggart said, all innocence. He had his paper stacked haphazardly in his arms. Stiles had forgotten all about him. Detective Stiles here is really good at catching criminals. The guy's behind bars.
Like a train wreck, Stiles watched as realization slowly came over the siblings' faces.
Laura eventually settled on outrage, and when she looked very dangerous, Stiles was looking at Derek. He was blank, absolutely blank. His eyes had shuddered, and like a black hole slowly sucking away all warmth, the comfort of his body began to recede.
Derek, he stammered, even as the man turned to walk away. He stumbled after him, aware of spectators watching and not caring.
Derek, I...
Save it, Stiles. He sounded exhausted. Just...
So Stiles saved it, and watched Derek walk out with his sister. It was like someone had punched a huge, Hulk-sized hole in his chest. Stiles did not go home and sob into his big red jacket that smelled faintly of Derek. He didn't. He did not eat an entire carton of brownie chunk ice cream. He didn't turn on the notebook either, because that was Lydia's thing, damn it, and he wasn't that. He wasn't. He was pathetic. He was absolutely positively gone. He thought about spamming Derek with apologies. He had his number. Derek had given it to him, just in case. However, he'd arrested stalkers before, and that didn't seem to be the right way. He sucked at writing letters, and an email seemed to be too easy to ignore. So he did nothing. When he walked into the station on Monday, Erica dropped her coffee. The cup miraculously fell right side up and stayed. That changed when Erica charged forward, knocking it over with her pumps. It was ignored. Darling! She took his face in her hands. They were cold. He didn't flinch. Oh, Stiles, she sighed. When was the last time you slept?
I think I dozed off a little on the drive here. He attempted to smile.
It dropped when Erica's eyes got a flinty look.
There's no way that you're doing anything today, she said decisive, and started dragging Stiles to Lydia's office. Her grip on his wrist was like steel, so he had no choice but to follow. Lydia and Jackson were making out on her desk when Erica burst in.
Well, Stiles thought bitterly, they seem to have fixed things.
Reyes, Lydia snapped, hastily buttoning her blouse. I specifically told you not...
She seemed to screech to a halt when she saw Stiles.
Christ, Stalinsky, Jackson said. His voice was dangerously close to something like concern. You look like you've just walked through hell and back.
Lydia quickly took charge. Jackson, out. Erica, get a sleeping pill, an extra large coffee, and one of George's cavity-inducing donuts.
On it, Erica ushered Jackson out.
Stiles, sit.
Stiles sat.
Where it used to be comfortable, the leather under him was cold and bumpy. This is about Derek Hale, isn't it? Lydia asked, but her eyes were soft. I heard what happened.
Stiles groaned and leaned forward.
Who hasn't? The department was rife with gossip. It only made him feel worse. Stiles, Lydia said gently. Have you tried talking to him? He doesn't want to hear my voice ever again, Stiles muttered. Her voice went sharp.
He said that?
He may as well have. It was like a kick to the nuts with one of Erica's stilettos. Lydia sighed, relaxing back in her chair. She was wearing a typical lady killer suit, the one that brought all the boys to the yard.
You have to do something.
I think I've done enough.
Stiles.
No. He cut her off for the first time ever. He was too depressed to feel any of the crawling fear that he might have in other circumstances. Lydia, just don't. She did anyway. At least, that's what Stiles figured, when he opened his apartment door and saw Derek Hale standing there. For a minute, Stiles could only stare in frozen horror. His hair was a tangled mess. He was wearing a pair of SpongeBob pajama bottoms and an old oversized Academy t-shirt. He was pretty sure that he stank, too, and he'd burnt his popcorn, so the smell drifted outside. Derek's nose wrinkled.
Is that?
My microwave doesn't have a popcorn button, Stiles said, automatically defensive. That was the first thing that he'd said to the man he had fallen for and hadn't seen in 2 weeks. God help him.
Okay, Derek said. I've been told that if I don't show up at this address ready to listen, I'll be investigated for suspicion of running a secret underground drug world.
I'm sorry, Stiles blurted out, and as always continued, I'm so fucking sorry. You're one of the nicest people I know, and my best friend saves puppies, so that's big. And you're all gorgeous and stubborn and kind, and I think I've fallen for you. I know I've fallen for you. And the fact that I've just told you that demands several hours of free therapy and Chunky Monkey ice cream. But please don't hate me, 'cause I love you.
Derek stared at him like he'd been hit in the head with a sack of potatoes.
Stiles was literally shaking with mortification.
Oh, God, he said, covering his mouth. He felt like he was going to hurl.
You are an idiot, Derek said, and dove in for a kiss. Stiles froze in shock before his brain caught up with his body and his mouth dropped open. Derek wasted no time in taking advantage, sweeping in with angry, frustrated strokes. Stiles moaned and fell back against the door, which of course wasn't shut properly. His grip around Derek's neck, when had that gotten there, ensured that they fell to the floor. Derek pulled back, his hair in his eyes.
You are impossible, he said. But he was smiling. I'm still mad at you.
That's great, really, Stiles beamed back. Even though his head and butt were throbbing, he felt like he could piss rainbows.
You know what's greater?
What would that be? Derek had absently started peppering kisses on Stiles' neck.
Well, Stiles said breathlessly, I'm 23, and decidedly not a hooker.
He waggled his eyebrows suggestively. And when Derek laughed, Stiles decided that maybe the universe liked him a little, after all. The End.
Sad Etsy Boyfriend by Paperclip. Read by Kath.
Someday he'll come along, the man I love, and he'll be big and strong, the man I love, and when he comes my way.
Chapter 1. Friendship was about give and take. Teaching this to Derek Hale was one of the many burdens Stiles Delinsky had taken upon himself. Plus, it was the guy's fault for sporadically showing up in his bedroom without permission. In the end, it worked out to the Alpha being in the wrong location at the wrong time. Stiles had just finished a scarf. Knitting was hard, man. Mostly because he kept accidentally stabbing himself with the needles. And oh shit, ow! But it kept his hands busy. The final product was lumpy and orange and homemade, which meant the internet would love it. He'd been in the midst of artfully draping it over his chair when he heard a stifled snort coming from his bedroom window. And there, perched on his windowsill, in those damned jeans that should have made that position absurdly uncomfortable, was Derek. Judging him. And his awesome scarf. The humanity. God, everyone had been telling him to get a new hobby. Excuse him for complying.
Huffing indignantly, he'd almost gone back to preparing the scar for its snapshot, when an awful, brilliant idea hit him. What was better than a scarf that came liberally sprinkled with the blood of a virgin? Why, a scruffy grown man adorned in said scarf. Companies used models for a reason. Insanely attractive individuals with bodies only Photoshop could achieve. Except he had access to someone who wouldn't even need any touching up. Styles grinned. Whatever it is you're thinking, no. It sort of spiraled downward from there. A penis-shaped brooch made of vibrantly patterned fabric? The people have spoken, Derek, and they want phallic imagery they can lovingly pin on their cardigans. Who am I to deny potential customers? Who am I to crush their dreams? Styles patted Derek consolingly on the shoulder before he readjusted the horrific pin. It had to be angled just so, to put the balls in the right light. The left one was sewn a little crookedly, which he'd obviously fixed before sending. But God, he wanted to take the photo now and get the listing up already. Taking three quick steps back, Styles cast an admiring look over the final product. Perfection. And maybe the pectoral it was affixed to helped a little. The pained grimace Derek bestowed upon him was almost enough to trigger his latent conscience, but not quite. Hey, cheer up. I'm bound to make it onto Rigretzi at this rate. You know, that's one of my life goals. Take one for the team, buddy. His reassurances weren't precisely effective. But hey, Derek was totally still standing there, even if he was scowling like, whoa. Oh well, the denizens of the online shopping community entirely approved of Derek's sullen mug. Those cheekbones, man. That jawline. Sheesh, he couldn't even blame them. Styles was beginning to suspect people purchased stuff from him as part of a cunning scheme to encourage him to take more photos of his mysterious sidekick with the eyebrows. If he uploaded an item that didn't feature Derek, it literally wasted away in his shop, doomed to enter the graveyard of unwanted listings. The feedback his customers wrote didn't even make sense. They were all positive, which was great, but, A++. The moment I donned this sweater with mismatched sleeves, I found that I'd developed a six-pack. Dream come true. Not sure if the yellow blob by the shoulder is a lemon, but who cares? Fast shipping. Item just as described. Smells like pure undiluted virility. Would buy from again. Wow, I never knew how much I needed a plaid beanie in my life until I bought this. When I wear it, it's like being caressed by the bristles of a 5 o'clock shadow. Snatching up the camera from his bed, he aimed it at his reluctant model. Derek glowered at him with all the hatred a man wearing a penis brooch could muster. It was hilarious. The best part was how he could cherish the photographic evidence of this moment in the years to come. Now, hold still. Remember, the camera loves you as long as you don't do the eye thing. Please don't do that. It's a bitch to crop out half your face. The customers get antsy. Tongue poking out of the corner of his mouth, Styles carefully positioned the frame so that Derek was centered. And I am not afraid to get out the sunglasses. Do you want to be a douche who wears sunglasses indoors? I think not. He'd found rambling set the werewolf at ease. The demand for cock-shaped jewelry shot through the roof. Holy shit! He legitimately ran a virtual store where the top-selling item was a dick. Perhaps he would avoid mentioning this little extracurricular activity on his college applications. Oh my God, Styles mumbled, bumping his nose against the computer screen. Refreshing did nothing to change the contents of the page. Crap. He wiped at the smudge his nose had left behind with his sleeve. Clearer now, but still the same. What now? The question was accompanied by what sounded suspiciously like a long-suffering sigh. Styles went rigid in his seat, shoulders hunching up around his ears, before he glanced back over his shoulder at the man sprawled on his bed in an explosion of crafts gone wrong and cheapo vintage finds. So, the internet has been jumping to dramatic conclusions. That had come out rather ominous. He waved a hand in the air, attempting for casual and winding up more awkward. And they think you're my sad Etsy boyfriend.
Oh, God. Derek's eyebrows were doing that thing. Not good. Which you aren't, obviously. There was literally not enough backpedaling in the world to rectify the situation. Someone clearly wanted an explanation. How the hell did a person freaking loom while in a horizontal position? Stiles swallowed audibly. One of these days he'd learn to keep his big mouth shut. Today was not that historic occasion, though. In his defense, he hadn't intended for this to happen. The goal had been so simple. Sell stupid shit online, bask in the glow of people wanting his lame stuff, earn a little spare cash. Although things did make a lot more sense now. Okay, see, I guess, they assumed that for you to be willing to allow me to use you to hawk my wares, that you must be getting something out of the deal. Nope, Derek wasn't getting it. There was no clicking action taking place. Just more glaring. So much glaring. You let me immortalize you on the World Wide Web in merchandise that would make a home ec teacher shed countless tears. And now Derek was no longer blinking. Stiles felt his eyes drying up as he tried to keep pace. Did he really need to spell this out for him? Toss a guy a bone here. Sex. Tons of sex. All of the sex. From me. To reward you. On the one hand, wow, flattering. People seriously thought that he was getting a piece of that. On the other hand, he was going to die. Because of Etsy. Could they include that in his obituary? Most pathetic cause of death ever. But I will totally get this mess cleared up, swear. Because you're a soul of righteous dignity, quality moral character, one who neither murders his friends nor expects sexual services in return for posing like a sultry dweeb and a deer stalker. Derek's face had contorted into an expression that was indicative of bottled-up rage or indigestion. Wait, was he blushing? No. Yes? Stiles squinted and leaned forward in his seat incredulously. It couldn't be. Why do you let me take dumb pictures of you? The question had hardly left his mouth before Derek launched himself off of the mattress in a single fluid motion. Several items tumbled off in his wake, including a snazzy pair of blue mittens and fuzzy earmuffs. Leaving. Pack thing. And with that, the werewolf was gone. Exited stage left. Straight through the window. Stiles blinked. Very faintly he could hear the telltale rumble of the Camaro speeding away. Well then. He spun his chair round to face his computer, which he simply stared at for a full minute as he gnawed away at his thumbnail. So, maybe he owed the internet an apology. Chapter 2. As it turned out, the internet reacted poorly to the sudden disappearance of his nifty werewolf prop. They wanted the grouchiest, sad Etsy boyfriend back. Immediately. Preferably in a hat with ear flaps and a matching scarf. If a scarf was unavailable, then they might be appeased by a bow tie, as long as it was color-coordinated to match the headgear. Stiles could not comply. For one thing, their demands were utterly unreasonable. For another, Derek fled on the sight of him. Or, at least, they conveniently kept missing each other lately. The guy hadn't dropped by since the fateful internet misunderstanding. Pack meetings started early and ended before Stiles could show up. He'd arrived to shrugged shoulders and mumbled excuses. And, really, guys, none of them were fooling him. Honestly, it was enough to give him a heady start on developing a complex. Maybe he'd misinterpreted Derek. The Alpha had probably just been all sorts of mortified. Finding out that internet strangers assumed the dude was dating some sort of lame teenager could do that to a person. What the hell was he supposed to do? Apologize? It had been an accident! Stiles rallied. He was good at that. It wasn't like Derek Hale was the only insanely attractive friend he had. Former friend? Individual he'd sort of hung out with on a semi-regular basis? Whatever. Whatever they'd been, and clearly no longer were. The obvious replacement was Scott. Scott, who was totally straight. Definitely. Or was mostly just Ellison sexual? That might be a thing. And he could dependably be coaxed into participating in Styles' schemes with minimal effort. Plus, he looked positively charming in a lopsided beret as he inquired for the umpteenth time if Styles could please finish up so they could go downstairs and play some video games. Please? God, Styles missed having a model who could pipe down long enough for him to take a photo and sat still, and who had mastered the laser eyes problem. His customers went batshit, and not in a good way. They thought Scott was a nice boy. Look at the darling smile, and his crooked jaw. So sweet. Adorableness incarnate. But not a sad Etsy boyfriend by a long shot. And certainly not the grumpy, scruffy lad who'd won their hearts. Luckily, he'd had the forethought to mention in the description how Scott was his best friend. Styles thought that lessened the sense of betrayal that flooded the messages he'd received. Maybe it was the beret, Scott suggested, a little downtrodden that no one had purchased it yet. The hat occupied the lamp of shame. Whenever Styles was in the room, he was forced to look upon it and be filled with disgrace. Once in a while, he feared it might catch fire and seek vengeance by destroying all of his worldly possessions. That had yet to happen. Having Scott remark on his degradation crossed the line, though. How dare you? But it's purple and orange, Styles. Other than that, it's great. Berets are supposed to tip over on a person's head. That was a veiled compliment if Styles had ever heard one. So maybe the hat was a tad asymmetrical. It did its duty. Styles sent the beret a withering look. Likewise, it was far from the hardest thing he'd ever made. The fingerless gloves had been the hugest pain in the ass. You'd think they'd be easier than regular gloves, but no, not really. The holes for the fingers had kept coming out too small or big or every other size than perfect. Then he had to start all over again. Styles had roped Derek into being his hand model, and in the end resorted to doing the final stitches while Derek was wearing them. It had worked, and he'd sworn off ever making another pair again. Once was enough for him. He came, he knitted, he triumphed. Also, he was so not going to wax poetic about past accomplishments, especially ones involving Derek. In fact, he wasn't even going to think about the guy. He found that he went through the list of viable candidates faster than expected. Isaac flat out refused at first. But then Scott and Styles double-teamed him, and through the wonderful magic that was peer pressure, coaxed him into a monstrosity that was supposed to be a hat shaped like a shark head according to the pattern Styles had used, but it had come out more like a blue blob with teeth. With his hair all smushed inside, Isaac had been the pinnacle of pathetic, the unhappiest camper to ever camp. Which, of course, made Scott feel bad. Styles glanced away for all of 3 seconds, and the duo had made a break for it. Scott shouting a fleeting apology as he rescued his fellow beta. Boyd expected monetary compensation should he consent to modeling. According to his logic, if Styles was making a profit, then he should receive his fair share for his services. Styles' explanation about how the pack was a financial drain on his livelihood between repairing his Jeep and various expenses proved futile. Jackson wasn't even worth asking. That guy had more than enough material to mock Styles without him voluntarily sharing his craftier hobbies. And he couldn't beg Danny to do it, because Danny would totally check out his Etsy store, and wow, there'd be a whole lot of Cousin Miguel. Styles was stumped. His glory days of penis brooches were far behind him. The local yarn store was as small as fuck and owned by a woman who might have been present during the founding of the town. She certainly hadn't updated her wardrobe since then. Styles privately called her Vampire Granny. Their mistrust was mutual. Evidently, her usual clientele did not include teenagers of the male persuasion. What did she think he was going to do? Stock up on knitting needles to begin his career as a self-taught ninja? Styles had been privy to dirty looks his first couple of trips. They'd paled in comparison to the glaring he'd put up with from the resident alpha. Like hell he was going to let a little old woman intimidate him off the premises. Even if said lady crocheted like a boss,
needles a silver blur above clawed hands. Somewhere between the fourth and sixth visit, they had reached a grudging truce. Cold hard cash was a worker of miracles. In all honesty, Styles really had yet to master the complex lingo of yarn. He could if he wanted to. But he rather preferred the method of simply wandering around and selecting his purchases based on a complex equation of his own devising. Softness, on a scale of a kitten's belly to holy shit, I think this sweater is a torture device, times color. It wasn't what one would call a scientific process. Perhaps there was a reason his masterpieces never came out quite like the sample images. He swung around a corner, trailing a hand through the wares as he went, and abruptly came to a stop as he slammed into a newly built wall. No, wait. Not a wall. Just someone who saw fit to stand in the middle of the aisle while perusing his options. In a leather jacket. Many people wore leather jackets. They were making a comeback. Or, possibly, they'd never really gone away. Styles rubbed ruefully at his nose as the loiterer turned around. And yes, of course it was Derek Hale. Because life took a certain vicious pleasure out of tossing Derek in Styles' path at every opportunity. He should say something, like an apology. That would be a good start. Definitely not anything along the lines of pleading him to resume modeling, because he couldn't sell a damn thing nowadays. And nope, Styles had dignity. Starting up a casual, polite conversation was totally within his abilities. You knit now? Styles couldn't contain his incredulity. This encounter was steadfastly dismantling his understanding of reality.
What? No.
To put it bluntly, Derek was the definition of a kid who'd gotten caught with his hand crammed in the cookie jar. There were crumbs, of the metaphorical nature, smeared all over that chiseled face. Dude, your arms are full of yarn. And so they were. The fact that they were black did not mean that they blended in with Derek's jacket. Camouflage only extended so far. Derek looked down, as if just as shocked to discover he was loaded with knitting supplies. For a second, Styles seriously thought Derek might chuck the balls in his face and make a run for it. I thought that I might try taking it up. Styles arched both eyebrows. He had been practicing in the bathroom mirror after showers. Nothing he did ever came close to the expressive dramatic quality of Derek's. Derek looked across between panicky and insecure, ducking his head while his brow furrowed. Never mind. I should go.
No, that's cool. I, for one, totally support your new hobby. 100%.
Styles shrugged both shoulders, opportunely positioning himself so as to completely block the aisle. This one led into a dead end. There was no way for Derek to escape, unless the guy wanted to scale the shelves or shove him over. I mean, I knit, as you know. A cornered werewolf was no match for Styles. Thus began the great Stalinsky-Hale knitting sessions. Derek refused to call them lessons, and Styles was fine with that, because they weren't. Not really. The few times he tried to give pointers, the werewolf had sniped at him and found an excuse to leave. This didn't count as training. There were no betas to berate or threats lurking around every shadowy corner. For once, Derek could be as laid back as the dude ever got. The pastime wasn't exactly that useful, considering how it would have been a hell of a lot cheaper to simply go out and buy a scarf. Derek would sit quietly on the bed, face screwed up in concentration, as he worked on what was shaping up to be a scarf, while Styles rattled on about whatever. And he made things too, mostly so Derek could quit acting so self-conscious. To be honest, Styles was just glad to have Derek over again. Hiding the fact that he had a crafting alpha in his bedroom from his dad was no trickier than usual. Derek had sworn him to secrecy when it came to the pack, though. And really, that was moronic. One's ability to knit was totally uncorrelated to one's ability to lead. Sometimes Stiles mulled deep thoughts about the sort of fictional sex life the internet imagined he must have had with Derek before the guy stopped letting him use him as a mannequin. They wouldn't have much to go by. On a superficial level, they knew that Derek was hot. Or, as one astute buyer had dubbed him in her feedback, a hottie mac hot, hot, hot. That either he never smiled for the camera, or simply rarely smiled, period. Maybe they assumed he could get Derek to crack up. Hilarity. Was Derek the taciturn boyfriend, gritting his teeth for the snapshot solely for the second afterward, when he was so impatient that he would fling himself at Stiles, all teeth and lips and a floppy knitted mittens? Or maybe he was just camera shy. God, between the pins and needles that congregated on top of his bed, they probably had better luck elsewhere. Like, up against the desk. Creativity could be quite an asset in coming up with innovative positions. And logically, the Etsy community was presumably blissfully unaware of the existence of werewolves. Maybe. Probably. They were a surprisingly perceptive bunch. A couple of them did sell wolfsbane incense. So, all of those highly inappropriate thoughts would come to a jarring halt once he realized what he was pondering. Usually, this realization struck right about the time he noticed that Derek was glowering at him. And, whoops, talk about a lag in the conversation. God, the internet had ruined him. Stiles didn't find out about the gloves until 3.5 weeks later. A cold front had hit Beacon Hills. It rained right before, because it always rained here. Afterward, the temperature slipped down by degrees, until the whole town was coated in a fine layer of frost. Black ice lurked on the roads. Straggling leaves found themselves frozen to their branches. They sparkled enchantingly under the sunlight. And obviously, because this was Beacon Hills, and normality had ceased to exist in this small piece of California, something else came with the cold. A fucking Yeti. Stiles would have laughed if he hadn't been too busy running for his life, sliding on patches of slick grass and dodging low-hanging icicles sharp enough to poke out an eye. Or two. He genuinely could not spare either. His level of hand-eye coordination already left something to be desired. The freezing air pricked at his lungs, a contrast to the fire that was the lining of his throat. Stiles stumbled, caught himself against a trunk, and kept on sprinting. His latest scarf trailed behind him, flapping wildly as if to cheer him on. Earlier, the plan had sounded so simple. Something lifted straight out of an episode of Scooby-Doo, honestly. Let the beta split up and spread out throughout the woods. Lead the monster to the trap. End of story. He was supposed to chill in the parking lot, sulking about his allotment in life that left him ill-equipped for high-speed chases on foot, while his friends risked their lives once again. Really, knowing his predilection for giant creatures armed with claws and teeth and lousy tempers, he should have seen the Yeti barreling onto the asphalt a mile away. To lock himself in his jeep would have been a death sentence. This thing was 8 feet tall and snarling. It had ripped a fire truck to shreds on Thursday. So Stiles ran. There were howls echoing in the wind and the gnash of teeth right behind him, and he was so close that he could make out the boundary of the snare. 10 more yards. 9. 8. A vice around his neck jerked him backwards, feet flying out from beneath him as he gagged. Stiles landed heavily on his back, gasping sharply at the impact, fingers clawing at the too tight scarf. Looming above him was a mobile mountain of dirty white fur, and oh, gross, they were swathed that happened to be a distinct yellow. And gripped in one massive paw was the end of his scarf. Stiles pried at the knot, loosening it as best as he could. His first thought was entirely useless. Per the norm, he couldn't resist sharing it, his voice hoarse as he spoke. Hey, your feet are surprisingly average-sized. The Yeti crouched and roared. Spittle flecked his face. This latest indignity was nothing compared to the creature's breath. Stiles choked a little on the noxious fumes. A few more whiffs of that, and the Yeti might not have to lift a claw to kill him. Something snarled and collided into the Yeti from the right. where Stiles had been no match, at least unarmed, for the mythological beast. A full-grown alpha apparently had little trouble clobbering the thing senseless. There went the humane trap idea. Stiles lifted himself up onto his forearms to watch, cringing periodically. That had to have hurt. When Derek finished, he pivoted around and stalked back to the prone teen. His features shifted as he extended a hand. Stiles hesitated before accepting the hand and tugging himself up onto legs, left jittery from adrenaline. There was a familiar softness of wool against his palm. Wait a second. He glanced down at Derek's hand still trapped within the grip of his fingers. You're wearing my fingerless gloves. Derek stiffened, jerked his hand free, and ceremoniously stuffed both fists into the pockets of his jacket. Like maybe if Stiles couldn't see the bright red gloves, he might forget their existence. When Stiles continued staring at him, Derek muttered, "They're mine." "But you bought them from my store." It was challenging not to take delight in Derek's awkwardness, especially when still high off the part where he had not died today. The poor guy looked out of his element, despite their wooded surroundings and the lump of unconscious beasts sprawled out by their feet. Stiles hadn't given much thought to someone purchasing the gloves. It had been one more sale to a customer he'd never met. Duh! Fingerless gloves were probably the only sort of gloves a werewolf could wear without fear of ripping. The F, Derek! If you wanted them, you could have asked. "It wrecked your scarf," Derek commented, as he picked up the shredded, stretched section that the Yeti had rudely used as his personal Stilinski leash. Least subtle effort of changing the topic ever. Stiles let him have it. "Yeah, well, we can't all be Isaac. There were people capable of working accessories in action-packed scenarios. Stiles was not gifted with his talent. Afraid this one's going to be a lost cause." The entire thing threatened to unravel. In the scheme of things, his scarf ending up the solo casualty was worth it. "I can make a new one." "No, you can have mine." Stiles greeted the generous, albeit vague, offer with a bemused expression. Fair was fair. Stiles rolled his eyes as Derek wrapped the scarf around his neck for the fifth time. Longer was necessarily better. Derek had overestimated how many balls he'd need, and consequently felt obligated to keep knitting until he'd run out. This scarf was a death trap waiting to happen, more so than his own had been. "I think this might work better if I was a giraffe," Stiles noted unhelpfully. Derek looped it once more so that it covered Stiles' mouth. It made for a very faulty muzzle. "Dude, treat your model with respect." "Stop moving," Derek grumbled as he rearranged the folds of the scarf. There was too much material, and not enough Stiles. Worse yet, now that Derek had finished knitting, he kept noticing all of the things he had done wrong. Stiles recognized too well the signals of an unsatisfied crafter, easily interpreting Derek's growing frustration. Bits of yarn fussed here and there, and the whole thing was littered with messy knots from where he had screwed up. It was a catastrophe. "This is such a dumb idea." "Sacrilege. It is ingenuous. The circle of life, but with less turning into grass and inevitable betrayal." Stiles tried to shake the mental image of Peter as Scar. He could tell that Derek was preparing to call it quits. The werewolf's shoulders had a hunched quality to them, and he had given up fiddling with the scarf. If he didn't act quickly, he'd lose him. Again. Derek emitted an indignant huff as Stiles unwound the scarf, ruining all his work. "What do you think you—" He cut off abruptly and watched with wide eyes as Stiles started looping the frayed ends of the scarf around his neck. "Practicing tying you to railroad tracks. Chill, it's gonna look better this way," he said reassuringly. Prepping Derek for a photo was like second nature to him, despite how it had been a while. The fact that Derek was naturally photogenic helped a great deal. What person wouldn't want to oogle a face like that? God! But Stiles pretended that his eye for detail helped a little. Stiles stepped closer and frowned down at the slack that sagged between them. "All right, you have to turn around now." Derek stared at Stiles' twirling finger. Spin, loop-de-loop, no comprende? Stiles held his arms to his sides. Ladies and gentlemen of the audience, he could be taught, and revolved in a slow circle. When he was finished, the scarf was neatly wrapped around both their necks. Of course, he promptly went to grab the waiting camera and produced a gagging noise when Derek simply stayed in place.
This is why two people shouldn't share scarves, Stiles, Derek pointed out,
ever the crusher of dreams and harebrained solutions. By now, Stiles was fairly adept at tuning such criticism out. A lifetime of practice served him well. He gripped camera strap between his teeth, letting the camera dangle against his chin while he fixed up the scarf so that it was no longer choking him. Derek stared at him, either bewildered by his antics or captivated by his chompers. All right, ready? He turned on the camera, switched off the flash, and stretched out his arm as far as it would go. Not one who excelled in the art of selfies, Stiles guesstimated the best angle and hoped for the best. Derek grunted inarticulately. When Stiles slipped an arm around his shoulder, the werewolf stiffened for a second, but stayed put. Now growl for the camera, Stiles ordered, before plastering on his angriest face, which included baring his teeth and scrunching up his nose. His gaze flitted to Derek's, and sure enough, Derek had on that trademarkable scowl. Perfect. Stiles put up the listing that night, a quasi-thank you for his customers. The scarf wasn't really for sale. It was a gift, after all. He set the price for $1 million. Insert maniacal laugh here. And shut down once it was live. Let the internet make of it what it will. He had a date with an alpha. Not an actual date. Not yet, anyway. They were just headed to the yarn store. Derek supposedly had a new project in mind, and Stiles was happy to act as the resident advisor. And if anything should happen along the way, well, he wouldn't be one to complain. The End. Human After All by Stars and Graces, read by Kat.
Someday you'll come along, the man I love, and he'll be big and strong, the man I love. And when he comes my way, I'll do my best to make him stay.
Summary. When Stiles digs the cyborg out of the junkyard, his main hope is that it will do his chores for him. He definitely doesn't expect it to have an attitude, demand to be called Derek, or have a serious ulterior motive. Stiles spends most of his free time picking over junkyards, looking for spare parts he can use. It's not a strictly legal hobby, but most people he knows do it, and most people who own the junk turn a blind eye as long as they don't get caught taking the higher value items. Stiles is really good at not getting caught. He sticks to the oldest, most isolated area in the junkyards. It takes a little longer to find what he needs, but he almost always can in the end, and without paying a cent for it. That makes him sound like a criminal, but he isn't. Okay, technically, he may be a little bit, but he doesn't consider himself one. It's just that the corporations, especially Hale Corp and Argent International, have such an iron grip on anything to do with robotics that the only way anyone else can get ahead is to skirt around the law a bit. All he does is repairs, little things, and on his own time. Today he's looking for the guts of a Vox box, for the skin bird of the old lady who lives in the apartment opposite. Mrs. Kuiper was distraught when it stopped singing. Stiles wouldn't ask her for payment, even if he thought she had the money. But he's sure she'll end up bringing him and Scott cookies or something in return for fixing the bird. He spots the Vox box he's been looking for, wedged deep in a crevice of metal and wires. Stiles sighs and rolls up his sleeve, figuring that he'll get scratched up either way, and he might as well save the shirt. It's one of his better ones. Carefully, he works his arm into the crevice, closing his eyes and probing lightly with his fingertips, brushing over springs, cogs, smooth metal, fabric skin, toes.
Sweet fucking dicks, he yelps,
jerking his hand back and dancing away from the leg. Something gouged into his arm in the process, and he clutches at it, peering into the hole.
That is definitely a leg. You've got to be kidding me.
It's not a body. It is a body, but it's not a human body. It can't be. Not in this part of the junkyard. Not buried as deep as it is. A human would have rotted away by now, and he'd have gotten a handful of metatarsals and phalanges, and then he'd probably have puked in the dirt. It would have been both undignified and gross.
Someone threw out a cyborg.
That's illegal too, of course. Stiles has never actually known someone who could afford a human cyborg. But he knows all the contracts of sale have a clause that if it breaks irreparably, or you just don't want it anymore, it has to go back to the manufacturer. Something to do with making sure no one else can steal that particular corporation's secrets. Ignoring his arm, which is slowly seeping blood from the scrape, Stiles starts to dig the cyborg out. He just barely has the presence of mind to toss the Vox box into the back of his Jeep when he gets to it. But other than that, he's entirely focused on the cyborg. He's never, ever going to find anything like this again. Not in a million years. He can't let someone else snatch it out from under his nose. The cyborg is a Derek model, a DER-3K, one of Hales Corp's flagship cyborgs. There's probably only 5 of them in the whole world. That just makes it all the more confusing that somebody would dump one in a junkyard outside the city. They're so expensive that Stiles has never seen one in person before, only in pictures or video. He gets it most of the way uncovered before he realizes there's no way he's going to be able to get the cyborg into his Jeep by himself. Shut down and supine, the thing's a dead weight. It's missing its right forearm, which has been severed messily at the elbow. But it would need to be missing all 4 limbs for Stiles to have a hope in hell of lifting it off the ground. Stiles calls Scott. He calls him 3 times until Scott picks up and groans, "Shit, what?" into the phone. "I need you to come down to Harris Junk," Stiles says. "I need your help. I found a DER-3K.
"What?"
"DER-3K, he repeats. "You know, Dedicated Eidetic Robot 3000, Hale Corp, costs more than all of both our saleable internal organs pooled."
"I don't want to know how you know that," Scott sighs.
"Look, you know I've been working nights. If you come down here and help me, I'll swap shifts with you the next 3 times you're on night shifts. No, the next 5 times. Come on, man, I really need you. I wouldn't ask if it wasn't important." When Scott doesn't reply, Stiles tries again. "And I'll get out of the apartment for the next month whenever you want, so Allison can come over." "So Allison can come over? I'll be there soon." And then he hangs up. Stiles whoops with delight. "I'm going to fix you up," he says to the cyborg. "I don't know what then. Sell you or make you do my laundry? Okay, yeah, I'm definitely keeping you to do my laundry. And my grocery shopping. I hope you know how to use coupons." He sits there, occasionally talking to the broken-down cyborg, until Scott shows up about a half hour later.
"Why do you think someone threw it out?" he asks.
"I don't know, the broken arm?" Stiles replies with a shrug. Scott kneels down to examine.
"Really? Because Hale could fix this, no problem. You and I could fix this. It's not the kind of thing someone would get rid of an expensive cyborg for. What if there's something wrong with its 3 laws?
Stiles scoffs, but he hasn't actually thought about that.
"I'm serious, man. What if?
It probably won't boot. They put in all kinds of safeguards in case it happens. But I mean, I've never even heard of it happening. Not outside completely unprovable urban legends." They both look down at the cyborg.
"You have to promise to let it kill you first so I have a chance to get away," Scott says.
"Yeah, that seems fair." Scott grabs the cyborg by its ankles, and Stiles loops his arms under its armpits, and they half carry, half drag it into the back of the Jeep. It sprawls there like someone at the wrong end of a party, or a body. Stiles considers that for a moment,
then drapes a blanket over it just in case someone happens to look in the back.
"What are you going to do with it?" Scott asks, looking over his shoulder at the cyborg. "You can't sell it. You'll get arrested."
There goes that idea.
"I thought chores."
"Great. Our illegal cyborg can vacuum the apartment. I hate doing that."
Getting it into the apartment is the next challenge.
In the end, they wrap the blanket around it, support it between the two of them like it's a person who can't really stand up by himself, and hope they don't meet anyone in the elevator. Unfortunately for them, Mrs. Kuiper is waiting for the elevator on their floor.
"Oh dear, boys, is your friend all right?" she asks.
"He had a little too much to drink," Stiles says, at the same time that Scott says, "It's a stomach flu, food poisoning kind of thing."
"He's basically having the worst day ever," Stiles adds quickly. "By the way, I'll have your skin bird fixed by tomorrow. I'll bring him over then."
"Thank you so much, Stiles," she says. She looks a bit doubtful as they hustle the cyborg away from her before she can spot the missing arm or the fact that their friend isn't breathing.
"This is all yours now," Scott says, after they dump the DER3K in Stiles' bedroom. "And don't forget you said you'd swap shifts with me. 6 night shifts."
"I'm pretty sure I said 5, Stiles says, but he's distracted by poking the cyborg's abs.
No human being could have abs like that.
"Yeah, but if you're always in here fixing this thing, I won't get the apartment to myself with Allison."
Stiles groans heavily. "Fine." He starts stripping the clothes off the cyborg to see if he can find any other external damage. It's all looking pretty good. And then he comes to its crotch.
"Oh my God, Scott, I think I found its arm."
"What?" Scott says, coming over to look. He recoils and covers his eyes.
"Dude, that's a dick."
Stiles flails.
"My entire point," he says. "Why would they build a cyborg with a dick? Do you think he's fully functional? Like Star Trek?"
"Oh my God, no. I don't know. And I don't want to think about it ever again," Scott says, backing out of Stiles' room. He still has his hand over his eyes.
"I'm going out with Allison, so please put that thing's pants back on before I come home, because it's kind of creepy."
Stiles tries to say something about beautiful engineering, but Scott's already gone.
"Looks like it's just you and me, Derek," Stiles tells the cyborg. He pauses.
"And your dick."
Stiles borrows some growth factor from work. No one's going to miss it, and his cyborg will look like the Terminator at the wrong end of the movie if he gives him a new arm without a layer of skin. He has to build the rest of the arm from scratch, so it's almost a relief when he gets to seed it with DNA and the growth factor and just wait for the magic to happen. The magic takes about 3 weeks. Stiles doesn't want to power up the cyborg completely until he can put the new arm on it, but he runs diagnostic after diagnostic and can't find anything that suggests it won't work when he tries. He puts it next to the DER3K, close to the elbow, so when he sees it out of the corner of his eye, it doesn't look like a severed hand lying around in the bedroom, although that's technically what it is. He talks to the cyborg, too, a running commentary of what he's working on, what's happening in his life. Stiles doesn't know when he started doing it, but after a while it seems weird to not talk when he's working on it. "Here's this stupid project at work that we just started on," he says. "Scott's working on it too, so at least I've got company while I'm shut up in there for the next 6 months. I signed a confidentiality agreement, but who are you going to tell?" Stiles picks up the arm and slides it into place. It fits as seamlessly as the left arm, which gives him a small thrill of pleasure. He's never worked on something like this before, so complex and intricate. "It's a new kind of artificial brain," he says. "I mean, probably not better than yours, because I don't think we're legally allowed to get that close to human brains. But different, you know? Easier to construct and easier to control. More energy efficient, too. Basically, you're old news if this works out for Argent. Hale's going to be scrambling to catch up to us. I think I'm going to try turning you on now," Stiles says, abruptly changing subjects, so to speak. He's not entirely sure of the best way to reactivate the cyborg. The more human the model, the less obvious the on-switch. And Stiles doesn't want to damage it by mistake. He also doesn't want to run a search online because of the dubious legality of the situation. If Hale has people looking for their cyborg, it's possible a search could trip an alarm Stiles really doesn't want to set off. He settles for giving it a small shock to the brain and heart. The electrode configuration is a little different with the cyborg, but Stiles is confident that he's got them in the right place. Worst case scenario, he fries it beyond repair. Best case, he has a functional cyborg ready and waiting for his orders. He has so much dirty laundry piling up, it's getting kind of ridiculous. "Scott," he calls. "The power's going down for, like, a fraction of a second." "Just in the apartment?" Scott calls back, his voice muffled. "The building? Maybe the whole block? But seriously, you'll hardly notice it. And if anyone else does, they'll assume the power surge was just one of those things that happens sometimes."
That's really reassuring. The walls don't entirely disguise his sarcasm.
Stiles really doesn't think he'll take out the whole block, but he still holds his breath when he flips the switch and sends the current through Derek's body. The lights in his room flicker and dim, and its muscles tense, arching it off the reclined chair, before it smacks back into it with a loud thump. It all happens in less than a second. The cyborg's unnaturally green eyes flutter open slowly, and it fixes them on Stiles, its face settling into a scowl.
"Don't you ever shut up?" it asks.
Stiles learns a lot about the DER3K quickly. It prefers to be called Derek, for one thing, and it gets kind of mad when he or Scott refer to it as it. Stiles finds it tricky to break the habit. "You're not a person," Stiles says. Derek digs his fingernails into the surface of the kitchen table.
"I'm a person. I think and I feel. I have a mind of my own."
"Someone made your mind."
"Someone made yours,"
Derek points out with a frown. He keeps picking at the table.
"Your parents, your teachers. A person is the sum of his experiences. Mine shouldn't be any less valid than yours, because we came from different places."
"Deep," Scott says on his way to the fridge. He chucks milk from the carton, and then turns back to Stiles, wiping his mouth with the back of his hand. "Dude, I have to go to work. Can you please get around to doing your share of the chores today? Allison doesn't want to hang out here anymore, because it's gross."
"Totally," Stiles says. It's about time he put Derek through his paces.
"I'll see you in the lab later." After Scott leaves, Derek looks up at him and says,
"I need clothes. Yours don't fit."
"Oh my God! Didn't anyone teach you to say please? You must be a person. I've never met such a rude-ass robot before," Stiles tells him. "And can you stop destroying my table and wash the dishes for me?" He stares at Stiles flatly.
"Really?
Please?" he tries after a moment. Derek rolls his eyes and lets out a long-suffering sigh, but he gets up and starts filling the sink with soap and water. "You have to do what I tell you," Stiles says after a while of watching Derek work. "It's the second law." The tension in Derek's body is immediate, but his reply isn't.
"Yes,"
he says eventually. He stacks the plates neatly on the drying rack as he goes, working methodically through the dirty dishes that Stiles and Scott have left to stagnate in the sink. "But you want me to treat you like you're human," he guesses, then amends. "A person. Will you do what I want if I ask you politely instead of ordering you?"
"Maybe," Derek says, "if I feel like doing it."
He turns around and bares his teeth at Stiles in something more feral than a smile. Knowing that Derek can't hurt him isn't really comforting right now. "That's why they trashed you, isn't it?" Stiles asks cautiously. "Not because of your arm." Derek looks down at the arm in question, flexing the fingers.
"No," he says. "I thought it was unfair how you all treat us. Like we're less than you. They didn't like that. They thought there was something wrong with me because I wasn't happy about serving humans. Because I won't take your orders with a smile on my face, like I should be grateful for it." I'm sorry, Stahl says. No, you're not. You feel bad because you never thought about it before, not because you're sorry. You should consider a career as a therapist, he says, a little annoyed. The drying rack is nearly full, and Derek isn't even halfway done with the dishes, so Stiles picks up a dish towel and starts helping. I'd have left you in the junkyard if I knew you were the only cyborg in the world with a passion for activism. I only dug you out of there so you could do shit for me. Then nobody's happy, Derek mutters. I can put you back there, Stiles says. He points a finger threateningly at Derek, and in the process drops the plate he was drying. Before he can even fumble for it, almost before he is aware of it, Derek catches the plate with his left hand and sets it gently on the counter. Stiles didn't know he could move so fast. It makes him wonder, even though he doubts he'll get an answer. He manages to hold it in until Derek washes the last fork and turns to place it in Stiles' hand. What did they build you for? Something I didn't want to be, he says, looking at his right hand, the one Stiles made. Things settle into something like a routine, where each person has no real idea of what the other person does with their time, but all the chores get done. Stiles can't tell Derek any more about his work, now that he has a working mouth and a chip on his shoulder about humans. It's too risky, especially with Allison around the apartment. But equally, he has no idea what Derek does with his time. When he asks, all he gets in return is one of the flat stares Derek is so good at delivering. He can make guesses. Derek has new clothes sometimes. Things that appear one by one, as if Derek thinks he's being subtle, which are invariably charged to Stiles' account. He doesn't know how Derek got hold of his card details, and he doesn't really want to know. The only reason Stiles never mentions it is because he knows Derek will give him a lecture on responsibility and the consequences of his actions. He found Derek. He reactivated him. Now it's Stiles' job to look after him, and Derek won't let him forget that. The worst part is that Scott agrees with the cyborg, and not his supposed best friend. He makes a good point, Scott says with a shrug. You're the one who insisted on dragging him back here and fixing him up. I thought he was going to be helpful. I didn't think he was going to be a he. Scott shakes his head. If you hate having Derek around so much, why don't you just deactivate him again and put him back where you found him? Stiles could do that. In fact, if he'd done it as soon as he realized that Derek wasn't your average DER3K, he wouldn't have had any compunctions about it. The trouble is that he stopped thinking of Derek as an average DER3K the time he tried to cut his own hair, and Stiles had to help him fix it. Now, Stiles thinks of him as a grumpy, attractive, socially awkward teenager with impulse control issues. A cyborg shouldn't be any of those things. Derek is a person, and so much of a person that sometimes Stiles forgets he isn't human after all. I need to go to the store, he says to Derek late one afternoon. Are you busy? I could use some help if you're not. Derek unfolds himself from where he sits on the couch, setting aside Stiles' AI tab. The screen immediately blanks itself out. Suspicious. I was just plotting the downfall of humanity, he says. It can wait a few hours more. The worst part is I have no idea if you're being serious right now, Stiles says. Derek smiles his strange, inhuman smile and says, You need to buy vegetables. I think the non-sequiturs are the most terrifying thing about you. He tosses a handful of canvas bags at Derek. Let's go. Please, can we go? We can go, he says affably, tucking the bags under one arm. They walk to the store because Stiles doesn't see any point in spending money on gas when he has a perfectly useful cyborg to carry everything home again. Not that he says that to Derek, for obvious reasons. When they get there, Derek kind of takes over. He leads Stiles around like he has a plan, dropping things into the cart and moving on to the next aisle briskly. How do you even know what to get? Stiles asks. I might have a shopping list that you're totally disregarding here.
Do you have a shopping list?
Well, no, but that's not the point.
I've been monitoring your diet,
Derek says.
That's creepy, dude.
Maybe. But if you don't have a shopping list, it's the most effective way to ensure you're buying what you need. He pauses in front of a display of apples, apparently torn between the red ones and the green ones. Stiles is sure there's some kind of difference other than the color.
Probably.
What about these ones? Stiles says, gesturing vaguely at the least expensive apples he can see.
Those, Derek corrects.
Stiles grunts.
All right, Lingo. Whatever you say.
Derek picks out a half dozen of red ones, before dragging Stiles off to the next stop on his mental shopping list. He doesn't waste any time, and Stiles has to stay vigilant to make sure he's not picking out the most expensive brands just to be an asshole.
It's great how invested you are in buying groceries when you don't even eat, Stiles says.
He curls his fingers around his wallet, which is feeling skinnier than normal today. It'll have to go on his card. Hopefully Derek hasn't depleted his funds too much with the painfully stylish leather jacket he's wearing today.
And you're not the one paying.
I eat, Derek says. I don't have to eat, but I can if I want to.
Stiles drags him up to the checkout before their total gets any bigger and pays, wincing slightly at the number that comes up.
This has better be the best food in the history of the world.
It's good for you.
They load up the bags and head for home, with Derek carrying most of the groceries because his muscles are made from science. The sun went down while they were in the store, and the neighborhood they're in is a little low on streetlights at the moment. The hair on the back of Stiles' neck prickles uncomfortably, but he shakes the feeling off. 2 blocks from the building, someone steps out in front of them and says,
"Give me everything you got in your pockets right now."
Then he levels a knife at Stiles' face. Stiles jerks away from it so fast he bumps straight into Derek, who sets down the bags he's carrying and wraps one hand around Stiles' upper arm.
"You don't want to do this," Stiles says, panicking. "Like, murder? My dad was a cop before he retired. There's all kinds of paperwork. Also, for you, prison."
"Shut up and empty your pockets," the man says. The hand holding the blade is trembling so much that Stiles doesn't think he could stab a fish in a barrel. But somehow, he doesn't want to risk it.
"No," Derek says calmly, taking a step towards him, putting himself between Stiles and the knife. "Turn around and leave us alone."
Stiles grabs at his arm and hisses, "Dude!" But Derek shakes him off.
"You should leave now. It would be better for you."
"Just toss your wallets over here and I'll let you walk away." The man is shaking more now from whatever he needs another fix off. He's desperate, and that's one thing Stiles' dad always taught him. Desperate people do desperate things. Derek doesn't get any taller. He stays the same height for sure, but he's somehow more imposing than he was 5 seconds ago. And his eyes, oh shit, his eyes aren't green anymore. They're glowing red. His lips draw back into the flat smile he favors, and he has fangs now, too, it turns out. He extends his left arm towards the man. That's changed as well. There are claws on each fingertip, long and wickedly sharp. Stiles can't believe his eyes. It's possible he's hallucinating this entire thing, but then he looks at their would-be mugger, and judging from his expression, he's seeing it, too. The man moans, and a dark stain spreads across the front of his pants.
"Go," Derek says, in a low, menacing voice.
And then he lunges, still only using his left arm, because the right is hanging limp by his side, untransformed. Holy shit. The man runs, probably faster than he's ever moved before in his life, the knife clattering to the ground in his wake. Stiles is suddenly sure that Derek could catch up with him if he wanted to, and tear him limb from limb. He might have trouble with only one working arm. But Derek is determined and has programming that lets him hurt human beings, apparently.
"Shit! Fuck!" Stiles exclaims. "What the fuck, Derek?"
Derek comes at him, and Stiles takes a step back without thinking about it, and he sees the hurt flash across Derek's face. He closes his eyes for a long moment. When he opens them, they're green again.
"Please," he says.
I can explain, but not here.
Scott isn't home when they get back. Stiles puts away the groceries like a sleepwalker, while Derek finally tells him the truth about himself.
The DER-3K models weren't built as luxury cyborgs, the way everyone thinks. We were created with a line of code that allows us to circumvent the first law under specific circumstances, Derek says. He paces the kitchen like a caged animal. To protect a human, we can hurt or kill another human, instead of harmlessly disabling them, as the law allows. I don't understand how it works, so don't ask me to explain. It just does.
Why would Hale do that?
Why else? They wanted to build soldiers.
Stiles leans his head against the door of the refrigerator, his stomach churning.
So you could kill people if they told you it would protect someone else? That was the idea. But the first law is strong, you know that. We had to see the person we were protecting and know there was a direct threat to their lives. Some of us, it went even further. But I was the only one who had to have some kind of emotional link with the person I was protecting to kill. To transform into what you saw.
Are you saying you like me? Stiles asks, deliberately missing the point because he can't handle this. Hale Corp tried to construct cyborg soldiers, which is so unimaginable that there isn't even a law against it. It shouldn't be possible at all.
You dragged me out of a pile of junk, fixed my arm, and let me stay in your apartment, Derek says, staring at him like he's insane. No humans treated me that well in a long time. But that's not the important thing here, Stiles. I was feeling things I shouldn't feel, being led by emotions I shouldn't have. I wanted to live a life where I wasn't a weapon, and I wasn't quiet about it. And that's why Hale deactivated me and left me for scrap. They knew I was going to talk.
I feel like you could have shared some of this information before now. He runs his hand over his head, helpless. This is a lot to take in all at once, especially when it is some serious conspiracy theory bullshit.
Would you have believed me if you hadn't seen it for yourself?
Yes. No. Maybe. You're terrifying. I'd believe a lot of things about you.
Derek rolls his eyes, resting his forearm against the fridge and leaning in close to Stiles. I couldn't hurt you even if I wanted to, Stiles. And I have wanted to. He grins quickly, human-like, but it fades just as fast. Knowing this information puts you in danger, the kind that I can't protect you from.
You know, I can actually take care of myself, Stiles says. Been doing it for years before you came along.
Not from anything like this, Derek says, and kisses him. Which isn't really what Stiles expected him to do, so he headbutts Derek out of surprise. It almost certainly hurt him worse than it hurt Derek, because Derek's skull is apparently constructed from solid iron.
What? Really? He yelps, clutching at the bridge of his nose. I have weird emotions like a human, and I like you. I'm the sworn nemesis of a powerful corporation. Let's make out. My head is made of fucking bricks. How is that an appropriate thing right now?
Derek crosses his arms and steps away. He's got that wounded look on his face again, and Stiles immediately regrets his outburst. In his defense, his nose really hurts.
Look, Derek, are you here? Scott half shouts as he bursts through the front door. Oh my God, turn on the TV, Derek's on it.
Stiles and Derek exchange a look. Oh crap.
The footage is shaky and a little out of focus, not to mention dark, but the people working at Hale know what they're looking for. A rogue DER-3K. Illegally modified, they assure the public, in the statement they released so soon after the video was uploaded that he must have had it prepared in advance, just in case something like this happened. They'll do anything they can to bring the perpetrator to justice and repair their cyborg. Stiles' face isn't visible at all.
That's good, Derek says.
He types rapidly on Stiles' AI tab, glancing between it and the TV.
That means you can stay here.
You say that like someone who plans to go someplace else. Dude, maybe he should, Scott says, frowning. We're both going to get arrested if they find him here.
Scott's right. That's why I need to leave. Derek looks between them both. I should go as soon as possible. They're somewhere I can hide out for a while, and they're expecting me.
I'll give you a ride, Stiles says inanely.
Don't be ridiculous, Derek says. It's not safe if you know where I'm going. For you, or for any of the other people who are there.
Then I'll take you part of the way there. It's not like I'm not already involved, idiot. Half the people in this building have seen you coming in and out of our apartment.
That's not true, he says offended. I've been careful.
If he was being careful, he knew something like this might happen.
Stiles is starting to feel like he's been played from the beginning.
What do you want us to do if they come here looking for you? Scott asks. Deny everything?
Derek nods. They probably won't question you too much. You work for Argent. Hale won't want to make trouble with them.
He's typing again, his fingers moving in a blur across the screen.
I've got a ride from Reno, he says to Stiles, handing him the AI tab. The screen's blank again, and Stiles is pretty sure he's wiped it. If you want to drive me there, you can. But then you're done.
I think we still need to talk about some stuff. So yeah, I'll drive you.
You should talk about how you're never going to bring a cyborg home again, Scott tells him dryly.
We will have that conversation when I get back, Stiles says, clapping Scott on the shoulder. Trust me, I'm totally with you.
It's an awkward trip. Reno's over 2 hours away when the traffic's good, and tonight it's anything but. And Derek doesn't seem to want to talk. At least not about the same things as Stiles.
He fills the silence with chatter that Derek won't respond to. In the end, he just stops talking, and they drive through the forested mountains and across the state line without exchanging another word.
How long have you been planning to leave? Stiles asks when they reach the city limits. Pretty much since you woke me up, Derek says, staring out of the window. It's nothing personal. I just have things to do. You should turn left here.
The casualness hurts for some reason.
You said you had feelings for me. You kissed me. I made a mistake, he says quietly. I didn't leave when I realized you were trying to be good to me because I liked it. And then I liked you. And then I didn't want to leave. But I shouldn't have kissed you.
I probably shouldn't have headbutted you, Stiles says. His hand rises to his nose automatically. It feels a little tender.
That wasn't the reaction I expected, Derek admits.
Did you think I was just going to fall into your arms because you saved me? Because, dude, you should know me better than that by now.
Derek goes quiet again, except to give Stiles directions to the parking structure where he's meeting his contact. Park on the fourth floor, he says. We're early. Because I thought I was going to have to get here on foot, he adds in reply to Stiles' quizzical look.
Yeah, sure. You were going to walk to Nevada.
I can move fast enough when I want to, Derek says. If he was built to be a soldier, it's probably true.
He parks and gets out, shoving his hands into his pockets. There are one or two other cars on this floor, but overall it's as good as deserted. It's a great location for a covert meeting, which is probably why they're here.
I'm not going to apologize,
Derek says, getting out of the Jeep and walking around to the driver's side.
For which part? Using my apartment to organize the robot uprising against humanity, or kissing me?
Both. He holds out one hand to Stiles, his right hand.
This part of me that you made is the only thing that doesn't change. You're the first human who helped me instead of trying to make me into their tool.
There's a question in Derek's eyes.
I actually wanted to make you into my housekeeper, Stiles says.
He reaches out and takes Derek's hand firmly in his, squeezing.
Answering the question, he hopes. And Derek is on him, all hot mouth and cool fingers sliding under fabric. He pins Stiles to the side of the Jeep with his hips, letting Stiles feel the hardness of his dick through his pants.
Fully functional, Stiles mumbles into his mouth, turning a little pink.
What?
Nothing. Derek is careful, avoiding Stiles' sore nose. In spite of the care he's taking,
He kisses Styles with a kind of restrained desperation that makes him want more. Styles cups Derek's face in both hands and rolls his hips against him, making his own erection obvious. It should be weird, should feel wrong, but it doesn't. Derek's just another guy, like he insisted all along. And Styles is an idiot. He unbuckles Derek's belt and unfastens the front of his jeans, slipping his hand inside his pants but outside his underwear, and palming him through it. Styles runs his hand up along the length of his dick, from his balls to where the head peeks out through the slit of his boxers. Derek responds by biting down on Styles' bottom lip with a muffled moan, worrying it with his teeth, until Styles curls his hand around Derek and strokes him. Derek's fingers are warmer than before when he closes his fist over Styles' cock, and skilled in unfair ways that make Styles' mouth fall open and pre-cum beat slowly at the tip of his dick. A thought sinks slowly into his conscious mind. Do you come? I can orgasm, in the sense of discharging accumulated sexual tension, Derek says, rubbing his cheek against Styles' jaw. I don't ejaculate, if that's what you're asking. He's like the sexiest Wikipedia article ever. That's weird as hell, Styles gasps. He rocks into the tight circle of Derek's fingers, wishing they were anywhere but a parking structure in Reno. A bed would be good. They lean into each other and the Jeep, making the best of what they've got. Derek makes amazing noises, little gasps and grunts and sighs, like this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to him. Styles almost forgot what it's like to lose himself in someone else's pleasure, to feel the slick heat of someone else's skin against his and make them ache with his touch. Derek's orgasm is unmistakably that, even without the warm gush of liquid that Styles expects to flood his hand. Derek shudders against him, his jaw set in a tense line and his breath gusting shakily over Styles' ear. Styles is messier when he comes, for obvious reasons. He's a flushed, sticky, trembling wreck, and he's never felt better. And then he remembers that Derek's leaving, and this barely counts as a one-night stand. The car pulls up onto the fourth floor while they're still tucking themselves away and, in Styles' case, cleaning themselves up. They're decent by the time it stops, and Derek brushes his fingertips against Styles' cheek before he turns to walk away. "Are you going to come back?" Styles asks, grabbing Derek's arm before he can get into the car. "Tell me to, and I will," Derek says, his face unreadable. Styles rolls his eyes and lets go. "Yeah, because you totally wouldn't resent me if I did. I'm not falling for your trick questions."
"It wasn't a question."
"Whatever. Are you?"
"Yes," Derek says finally, determined. "When things have changed, and they will, I'll come back."
He slips into the car and closes the door behind him. Styles watches it drive away and wonders what he's unleashed on the world. The end.
The Time-Traveling Werewolf's Confused Spirit Guide by The Field's Whale, read by Cap. Summary. Normally, you don't imagine yourself as living in the dystopian future that hapless time travelers accidentally stumble into. Or that Wentworth Styles learns the hard way that reality is not static, time is not a river, and sometimes the way things are is not the way they were supposed to be. So, here's the thing about the spark. It both is and isn't something special. The spark itself is even more common than actual diamonds. Everyone has it to one degree or the other, because the spark is life itself. It's the beginning, the end, and every last thing in the middle. What separates a spark from a normal human being or a squirrel or a stalagmite or a discarded Dasani bottle is that they have a little extra spark along with the will, the need, and the imagination to use it. Styles has all four of those things, but lacks that crucial fifth step where you actually have a freaking clue what to do with yourself afterwards. Because, as it turns out, there is no Hogwarts. There's no benevolent mentor. Styles does not have a magical Mr. Miyagi.
Dr. Deaton is not interested in the job, and Miss Morell is a little too interested. The only instruction he gets is this, and it comes from a witch that Boyd ends up having to kill, because she's trying to summon up a demon to do something. She never really was clear on where she planned on going with that, and Stiles wasn't in a position to ask. "The spark is what you make it," she says this as she strops the ivory-handled straight razor she plans to slit Stiles' throat with. "Everyone is different with different sparks. The only thing that stays the same is the duty using it imposes on you."
"Duty? I don't understand."
Stiles is making a weak show of struggling against his bonds, which is really a cover for the fact that he's dislocated one wrist and is wiggling out of the handcuffs she used on him. He has never been so glad that he inherited his dad's broad wrists in his life.
"You will," she murmurs, eyeing her reflection in the blade's mirror surface. "You will." He does.
The first time he wakes up in the middle of the night, full of the need to be doing, in a way that has nothing to do with his usual hypermanic phases, he understands. That time, it makes him drive all the way out to Mount Shasta to paint a mystical sigil on Dr. Fenris's front step, which somehow prevents the man from committing suicide when he gets home from an overnight call, but also makes him forget that he ever even heard the word werewolf. Dr. Deaton is waiting for Stiles when he gets home, but rather to hand him a beer he's too young to buy for himself and clap him on the shoulder.
"Does it get easier?" he asks the older man as he cracks open the bottle using the edge of the kitchen counter.
"No," Deaton sighs, and looks just for a moment like he's 500,000 years old. "It never does."
"Don't sugarcoat it for me or anything, Doc," Stiles gripes.
Deaton snorts and gives him a smile that is somehow so much more genuine than the benevolent, all-knowing expression he tends to say for people like Scott and Derek. It occurs to Stiles in that instant that he isn't Deaton's student anymore, if he ever was. They're equals in this thing, whatever it is, and have been since Stiles looked at a bumper sticker and used his willpower and imagination to create something out of nothing.
"Why do you think I brought you the beer?" Deaton asks.
So it becomes just one more secret, because after the first 20 you might as well keep going. Only this one is one he's keeping from everyone, except a few select individuals, and even they aren't people he can trust all the time. Alan Deaton has always danced to the beat of his own drum, and Miss Morell's motivations are as opaque as her demeanor is inscrutable. Stiles refines his style and learns some things about himself in the process. Mainly that he will never be a martial badass, and should probably leave that up to the werewolves. He's very much a background kind of guy, more of a Q than an 007. Eventually, he's going to have to be okay with that. It hasn't happened yet, but Stiles supposes there's time for all that. The universe is surprisingly courteous that way. It never drags him out on a call the night before a test, or in the middle of werewolf trouble, or makes him late for a meeting. What it demands is never more than he can give, which is actually kind of distressing, because that still covers a lot of territory. Still, there are parts of the internet that exist for Stiles alone, and he never has to live without a book he really needs, or sometimes just wants. They always find their way into his hands, be it through the library, a recycling bin full of discarded books, or the occasional yard sale. His window box grows plants that normally wither under the California sun and are remarkably resilient to being trodden on by jackbooted werewolves. It's nothing he would have called magic a year ago, but it's his. His extracurricular activities and his extra-extracurricular activities very rarely overlap. Once Stiles would have said they never do, but that stopped being true when he woke up at 4 a.m. on a Sunday with the overwhelming need for a breakfast burrito from Mama Occhiello's. Sometimes the call of duty takes weird forms, okay? So he piles into his Jeep, ignoring the disbelieving noise his dad makes at seeing him showered and awake so early, and drives over to an unbelievably sketchy taqueria on the north side, run by an 80-year-old Mexican immigrant and all her grandchildren, where the telenovelas never end, and heaven is served on a paper plate wrapped in tinfoil with a plastic cup of salsa verde on the side.
He's not expecting to see Derek Hale sitting on the possibly stolen park bench out front looking lost. The foil-wrapped burrito in his hand is less surprising, except for the part where it's no longer steaming in the cool early morning air and has clearly been allowed to go cold. It's one of those ultimate meat destroyers that's like 3,000 calories in one go and in the hands of a werewolf. That thing should have been demolished by now. Not that he gets to see Derek eat very often, but seeing a werewolf off his feed is very distressing to Stiles, for obvious reasons. "Yo," he says, strolling up to the bench from the darkened parking lot. "Derek." He tacks the name on in an afterthought that makes him sound kind of weird. But whatever. If Derek hasn't figured out that he's a weirdo by now, then there's no hope for him. Derek's eyes flick up to him, looking bright, icy blue, and like he doesn't know Stiles at all. "Well, shit," Stiles says with feeling. So time-traveling 15-year-old werewolves, they are apparently a thing. "I was on a vision quest," Derek mutters it, with all the butthurt dignity of any teenager ever, into his second destroyer of the evening, which he got to go and is currently inhaling while seated in the passenger side of Stiles's Jeep. "It's part of my rite of adulthood." He pauses and grimaces a familiar grimace. "Normally, no one in my family actually gets a vision. You just stay outside all night, get cold and hungry, then come back in the morning for a pancake breakfast and presents. Lucky me, I suppose." Stiles squints at Derek. "Mostly, I am offended that you are growing facial hair at 15, he says, and pokes Derek in the jaw. Derek tolerates it surprisingly well. "What the hell, man?" "Werewolves hit puberty earlier," and Derek says, like Stiles isn't mushing his cheek with an index finger and has yet to draw back a bleeding stump. "It just lasts longer and manifests differently." The thing is that Stiles can absolutely buy that this is a much younger Derek from the future. His expression is open in ways that now Derek's never is, and maybe never will be again. He emotes, for Christ's sake. Stiles didn't believe until now that Derek even knew what emotions other than rage and tragedy were. He still calls now Derek up on the phone to verify that there are indeed two Dereks running around Beacon Hills. "Is it an emergency?" now Derek growls into the phone. "Not really, unless you count..." Stiles is talking to dial tone before he gets much further than that. "Yep, that's you," he tells young Derek, who is regarding him with a sort of adorable crinkled puppy dog expression that reminds him of Scott in weird mentally incestuous ways. "Are you sure?" young Derek asks. "He sounded like an asshole." Stiles considers his response, but there is no good way of putting it. "Because you kind of are?" He winces as Derek's face goes from confused puppy to kicked puppy. Stiles drums his fingers on the steering wheel as he talks. "Look, you've got reasons. Like legitimate and heartbreaking reasons that are traumatizing just to hear about. I don't even know what all they are, because for every one thing you let slip, there's always like 10 more lurking in the wings, just waiting to rain on someone's parade. Usually yours." He shrugs one shoulder. "Yeah, I know. Not what you want to be hearing on your vision quest of adulthood. The good news is you become an alpha." If Stiles hopes that that would give younger Derek some hope for what is looking to be an abysmal future, then he hoped incorrectly. Too late, he remembers exactly how Derek got to be an alpha. "There is less patricide involved than you're probably imagining," he adds belatedly. "You got any idea how long this quest is supposed to last?" Derek wets his lips, and Stiles does his level best not to get distracted by his bizarrely adorable overbite. Since when did Derek even have that? This isn't fair. "Until dawn, I guess. That's what my uncle told me. The sun will guide you home." He looks towards the horizon, where the sun isn't even warming the sky yet. "I suppose I have a while." His uncle being Peter. Oy vey. "My dad's at work by now." Stiles makes the offer because, really, it's in everyone's best interest to keep this Derek off the streets.
You can chill out at my place until it's time to go back. Derek cocks his head and considers Stiles.
Yeah, he says at length. We can do that.
The drive to Stiles' place is mercifully uneventful, although Derek putters with the radio, ignoring Stiles' declaration of driver picks the tunes, passenger shuts his cake hole, until he finds a soft jazz station and settles into his seat with an expression of what can only be described as meditative bliss.
Would have figured you for a classic rock guy, Stiles observes, unable to let it go.
Music soothes the savage beast, Derek says completely without irony. He cracks an eye to peer over at Stiles. My sister listens to the loud stuff enough that I like the break when I can get it.
Figures Laura would have been bossy.
Stiles sighs. He's never been able to get a read on Laura Hale's personality beyond tragic and dead. But given the fact that she was raised to be the next alpha, it follows that she'd have had a forceful personality.
She is, Derek agrees softly.
He looks up as Stiles pulls into the drive and says,
This is the sheriff's house.
Yep, my dad, Stiles confirms, and frowns as Derek stares at him.
What?
I don't recognize you, Derek says, looking oddly intent.
I feel like I would have recognized you. My mom and Mrs. Stalinsky are friends.
Yeah, well, I'd be in the fourth grade and using a different name. Stiles dismisses Derek with a wave. Does she have a weedy, hyperactive 10-year-old with a name no one can say?
That's me 7 years ago. Come on in. I have an Xbox and a bunch of games you won't get to play for another 4 years.
Derek perks up at that, which is something Stiles falls away in the back of his mind for the next pack bonding session. As it turns out, 15-year-old Derek is a murderer at fighting games. They get through Unreal Tournament and Soul Calibur 4 before Stiles calls a break. Seriously, he's not going to be able to sit for a week after that beating. But something about young Derek's sportsmanship makes him not mind.
I need snacks if I'm going to be defending my honor this hard.
He groans and kicks his feet out in front of him. As if on cue, Derek's stomach rumbles, loudly.
Seriously, already? Stiles groans,
and Derek ducks his head as if apologizing for his bodily needs.
You're worse than Scott and Isaac combined.
Fine, I'm going to make nachos. I've got some books you can read on the shelf over there.
In retrospect, Stiles is going to admit that leaving a time-traveling werewolf alone in a room with all his journals, notebooks, and the entire internet is a bad idea.
In his defense, Stiles was planning on being gone for 10-15 minutes tops. He wasn't planning on fielding a panicked phone call from Scott, who just remembered the physics exam they had scheduled for Monday. Stiles putters his way through making nachos and only manages to extract himself after some 40-odd minutes by promising to email Scott scans of all his notes in preparation for an epic cram session. His notebooks are scattered across the floor when he gets back up to his room, with a triple portion of reheated nachos balanced on his fingertips. Derek is nowhere to be seen. But when Stiles looks at his computer, he sees a browser window up, and it's displaying an entry from the Beacon Hill Gazette archive. No need to say which one. Stiles is just starting to panic when he looks out his closed and locked from the inside window to see the sun has crested the horizon. The breath leaves him in one gust. "The sun will guide you home," Derek had said, and apparently it did.
"Well, shit," Stiles mutters and puts the nachos down on his desk. "Could have possibly have fucked that up any worse than I did?"
Stiles holds still and listens for the sound of causality collapsing in on itself. It fails to happen, and Stiles is forced to conclude that the answer is yes. He emails Scott the physics notes on general principle and then crawls into bed for a good long mope. At some point while he sleeps, the page on his laptop is replaced first by a 404 error and then by an article on a gardening show. It takes Stiles all the way into third period to figure out that something is wrong. Scott's pretty much the same,
if a bit clumsier, and is still every bit as gone on Ellison as he was before. So apparently that is all Scott, and not some freaky werewolf mating thing. Ellison seems a bit perkier. Less like three of her family members went nuts and all died in increasingly gruesome ways over the course of a month anyway. Isaac's in another class altogether, advanced placement, and is walking upright and bright-eyed with way less leather in his wardrobe than Stiles remembers. Lydia is less brittle-looking, and Jackson is his old self, which is to say, a raging asshat. It's not all sunshine and roses, though. Erica is still wearing gray and has spots. Miss Morell is walking around with a pinched expression, like someone peed in her Cheerios this morning. And Dr. Deaton is sitting on the hood of Stiles' Jeep when he makes his way into the parking lot. "What the hell is going on?" Stiles hisses as he gets to within earshot of the vet and out of earshot of any potential werewolves in his class. He's spotted two Hales thus far, raven-haired twin girls who stick close together and giggle a lot. He knows they were a big family back in the day, so there's no telling how many others are around. "The timeline has changed." Deaton has a soda for Stiles this time, not being so dumb as to hand a minor an alcoholic beverage in the middle of a high school parking lot. "You, I, and Bianca are the only ones who will remember the other world. It's part of what we are. Using the spark makes you a fixed point in time. Your memories will start to fill in as the day goes by." "My memories? Screw my memories! How do I fix this?" Stiles quacks and gesticulates in some manner that he hopes will convey the massively fucked up situation they're in right now. "This isn't the right world." Deaton catches him by the wrist, forcing him to stop flailing around. "It is the right world, Stiles," he says, all infinite patience and acceptance. "Reality is not what you think it is. It's constantly changing and rearranging itself. The universe self-edits." Deaton releases Stiles and points across the parking lot to where Scott and Ellison are being adorable all over each other by Ellison's SUV. "The people you love and who love you are more than the things they have done. Scott is no different as a boy than he was as a werewolf." "But a relationship is a sense of shared history. If the history is now just fictional, then what kind of relationship can we possibly have?" Stiles points out. He starts to pace as he tries to bleed off some of his distress through physical activity and furious analysis. "The same relationship yet before, one of mutual trust and occasional respect. The important things haven't changed. Reality is resilient that way. It's not fiction." Deaton taps Stiles in the forehead. "Everything has really happened. You're just remembering the way things could have gone." "Is this why you're so distant all of the time?" Stiles casts about looking for something, anything stable, to hold on to, and finding none. "How can you connect, really connect, with someone when they might not remember you the next day?" "That's not how it works, Stiles," Deaton sighs. "It's not always easy, I'll admit. Peter and Derek Hale are people I usually like and respect, but I did not like or respect the Peter and Derek you first met." His gaze turns hard. "However, I know that there's more to both those people. I know because I've seen them at their best and at their worst. You will always be bouncing back and forth between timelines, Stiles. But the people you love will always be there. The important things never change. Somewhere inside, they are always the same." "You say the universe self-edits." Stiles whips around, only taking barest notice of the fact that no one in the parking lot is paying attention to this bizarre exchange. "Then my world, my original timeline, had to serve a purpose. What was it? Do you know?" Deacon shakes his head. "It was a dark time," he admits. "And it lasted for a very long time. I can't pretend to understand the innermost workings of the universe, but if I had to guess, I would say it was to make you." Stiles goes still. "What?" "You didn't exist before the shift that led to the Hale fire." Deaton points towards the Hale twins who are passing by, not even looking in their direction. "Before that, Scott was just my well-meaning, if slightly dim, assistant. I never saw the potential for him to be a hero. But look where you led him. Scott laughs at something Allison is saying. He may not remember all the lessons he learned in your timeline, but part of him still has them stored away all the same. He's deeper now than he was before, and it's because you exist. It's one of the reasons I declined to train you at first. I had no idea what you were. I've never witnessed the birth of a spark before. I thought you might be another Bianca, and for that I am sorry. Despite the fact that he wants no part of what Deaton is selling, Stiles can't help but remember young Derek saying, "I would have recognized you." Wouldn't that have been true? His scent should have been familiar at least, even as his mom wasn't prone to dragging her son along to girls' night out with Mrs. Hale. So what? I'm supposed to just go home? Play video games and hang out with Scott like nothing ever happened? Like we didn't almost die half a dozen times? Like his girlfriend's family isn't 8 different kinds of crazy, just waiting to go off? That's exactly what you should do. Deaton hands him the soda bottle. Go home and take some time to absorb everything that is different. Learn the changes. This isn't the perfect world. Beacon Hills doesn't know how to be the peaceful hamlet it pretends to be. Something will happen soon enough. Stiles accepts the drink. What else can he do? Absorbing things, however, is going to have to wait. Because when Stiles gets home, Derek is waiting in front of his house, pacing back and forth on the front walk, like he's trying to convince himself to go up and knock. He and Derek don't know each other in this world. Stiles has absorbed enough to know that much. Derek is too busy blowing up the bestsellers list to spend time hanging around teenagers, like his old self did. Stiles pauses for a moment to regret the fact that he'll never know if the other Derek was also a novelist. Stiles wouldn't have guessed so. But in retrospect, he seemed to have an awful lot of money for someone with no visible employment. "Hi there," he calls out, and gets a vicious stab of enjoyment out of the way Derek freezes, and then slowly turns around, wearing a disturbingly friendly smile. Stiles knows that smile. He's seen it turned on poor, unsuspecting deputies who ended up having to get treated for a concussion afterwards. That is Derek trying to be charming, which almost always ends with someone getting knocked out. "Oh my God, could you maybe try a little less hard?" He blurts it out without thinking, and ducks in shame when Derek's eyebrows crawl up into the vicinity of his hairline. "Can we pretend I didn't just say that?" "You..." Derek wets his lips, and it is every bit as distracting on 24-year-old Derek as it was on 15-year-old Derek. Maybe more so, now that Stiles doesn't feel like he's creeping on a kid. "You recognize me." "What, do your creepy werewolf powers tell you?" Stiles slaps a hand over his traitorous mouth, which does nothing to allay the surprise pleasure on Derek's face. "Yes. Hi, Derek. Hello there. You remember me." Derek takes a step forward and then another. "You found me at the taco place when I was on my vision quest. We played video games, and you went downstairs to make nachos right before the sun came up." "And you read all my notebooks," Stiles agrees. "About that," Derek has the good grace to look chagrined. Holy Mother Mary, this Derek knows what shame is. "I know I shouldn't have, but I had to know." He drags a hand through his hair, and Stiles realizes that there is no metric ton of product keeping it in that weird reverse ducktail Derek used to sport. It's all clean and touchable now. "No, bad thought. Bad. Stop that. Look, when you called me, you knew." I could hear him talking. Derek frowns. "I can't imagine talking like that to someone who was being nice to me. I had to know why I was like that. Why you kept talking about werewolves who weren't part of my family." He swallows. "Why you used the past tense when you talked about Laura." "Oh, well, shit." "I'm sorry about that," Stiles admits, and rubs a hand over his head as he drops his gaze. "I probably could have handled that better." He blinks when someone catches his hand. It's Derek. No, you did what you were supposed to do. Derek isn't looking at him, though. He's looking at Stiles's hand in his own. They're of equal height. Derek's got a bare half inch on Stiles, but you wouldn't really be able to tell that by looking at their hands. Derek's got slightly shorter fingers and a broader palm, where Stiles has abnormally long and flexible fingers and paler skin with a dusting of freckles across his knuckles. You're supposed to meet someone during your quest. Derek speaks slowly, as he is prone to. It's nice to see that this at least hasn't changed. It can be a family member or someone you're close to. They show you what you're supposed to learn. Even if you didn't mean to, I think I was supposed to see those things you left out. I was supposed to learn from it. I did, he frowns. I hope I did. It's different here now. I wasn't expecting you to remember me. He looks up, strangely earnest. I had no idea how to say thank you. You're, welcome. Stiles rocks back on his heels, nervous energy building inside of him again. I really shouldn't, but I apparently do, so this is all kind of weird for me. I'm sorry. Derek looks sorry, too, even though he didn't do anything wrong. Not really. Was he supposed to just let his family burn? Everything is different for you now. I didn't know that would happen. No, look. Stiles can't quite get past the part where they're still holding hands. Seriously, what is this? This, the remembering? That's me. What I am, I guess you could say. I don't really understand it yet, to be honest, but it's nothing you did to me, so don't be sorry. Oh. Derek nods, looking very serious. I'm not, is the thing. I should be, but I'm not because it's you. You're here. He edges a little closer, and Stiles realizes that something has gotten lost in translation as Derek's hand closes around his. Actual you. And I get that I'm not your actual Derek, but I'd like it if you gave me the chance to be. This is some incredible heavy shit based on 3 hours of an acquaintance. Look, Derek, Stiles starts to say, but for once he can't find any words that mean what he wants to convey. It wasn't a coincidence that you are the one who found me. Derek hasn't let go of his hand, but he's eased up on his grip a little. I was granted a vision, and I have to believe it was for a reason. You were part of that, and I think I know why. I hope I know why. He takes a breath. I am older than you now, and that's weird, I know. But I got to know you when we were closer to the same age. The other me was an asshole to you, but you were still kind to him. I would like to not be an asshole. To you, specifically. It turns out I'm kind of an ass generally, but I can do better when it counts. I came here hoping you'd give me the chance to try.
Dude, are you asking me out?
Stiles kind of hates that his voice has gone high and thin, but none of that matters in the face of this bashful little boy grin Derek's giving him right now. He thinks back to what Deaton said and has to wonder if this was the Derek hiding underneath his Derek's protective shell of scowls and leather.
Yeah, Derek says. Your dad is totally going to shoot me, but so long as he's not using Wolfsbane, I should be fine. I can take it.
I know you can take it, Stiles mutters. Speaking of things I'd rather never see again, how about less getting shot? I can handle cutting bullets out of my jerk as alpha, but it's less cool when we're talking boyfriend material. Derek grins, bright and fast and real.
I can do that, he promises, etching closer still. So, is that a yes?
Yeah, I guess it is. Stiles says, and means it.
Yes to everything, to a whole new world with new problems, and old faces with new smiles, because the important things never change, but sometimes you see them a little differently.
The end.
I'm waiting for the